The Koi Gig Pod on Off The Ball.
I don't like it. I want to be up there in Group A. I don't care who we get. We should be up there competed against them. But, you know, as you said, we're going to win that group and then get promoted, hopefully.
Subscribe to the feed in the OTB Sports app now. OTB AM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now.
Very good morning to you. Welcome along to Thursday morning's OTB AM. We're here with you as per usual until 10 o'clock this morning. It's a very busy and stacked studio, I have to say, this morning. Delighted to welcome back, as always, Johnny Ward. Johnny, good morning.
What do you mean, delighted to welcome back, as always? I'm peripheral kind peripheral, of character
perennial,
on the show.
Perennial, yeah.
Peripheral, perennial.
Part of the woodwork. You've got a bed underneath the desk there.
You hit, I won't hear of it. Tonight you'll sleep on the floor of your office. You were up early, Shane.
I was up very early, yeah. 4.45 start. 4.45 start. The guys here work hard too. Colin Buhig and Kathleen McNamee, good morning.
How you saying?
Morning.
Johnny, don't ever doubt your involvement in the show. If we won if we won the league, you'd have enough games to get a medal.
Yeah. Was it Jeff Kenna?
The media league.
Oh yeah.
Did Jeff Kenna have 9 games for Blackburn when they won the league?
Oh, I don't know.
Was it Jeff Kenna?
10, is it?
You know, they subsequently changed that rule. They're kinder about it.
Are they?
Yeah, because players used to miss out very unfortunately. Quentin Unfortune.
Oh, I see what you
because
fortune.
He missed out.
Misfortune.
He missed out.
Misfortune. Do you know, I'm just thinking of Monaghan early rising. Patrick Kavanagh, when he first came to Dublin, he walked.
Walked to Dublin.
He just walked. Like he was like, I'm going from Inneskeen in Monaghan to Dublin. But like,
it's quite a walk.
It's quite a walk. Like, so you had it easy.
At least I was in a vehicle.
Yeah.
Do you know, that's not vehicle. So bad. Making me feel bad now. Maybe I should have walked.
Our next-door neighbour during the old days of Connacht finals over in Roscommon used to get up in the morning, walk from Screen, which is like practically in Ballina, all the way to Roscommon and be there in time for 9 o'clock mass before the match.
How long a walk is that?
I mean, it's like an hour and a half drive-ish.
That's ridiculous.
Did the mass really help?
No. Questionable.
I did the Camino before.
Probably just needed a little
long does that take?
Camino de Santiago. We only did it. We did 4 days. We did the last. You get the certificate if you do the last 100K. It's a 780-kilometer walk. The Camino France.
Jesus.
From Saint-Jean-Pierre-du-Port to Santiago de Compostela.
You'd be raging if you did the full 700K and people get a certificate for doing 100.
Yeah. You have long walks.
Oh, segue.
The opposition goalkeeper last night, Shane Hannan, in your game, had a long walk to the shower afterwards because it's 3-3. It's the cup semi-final, Johnny.
What are we talking about here?
This guy, the presenter, your presenter.
Monaghan Town.
Right.
Versus Cavan Town last night.
Oh. Yesterday. Then drove up north for a game. What happened?
It was a big one. You know what happened, right? I was up front. I was in the number 10 role, actually, behind the main striker. Doing a bit of running. Wasn't having the greatest game I've had. Probably an average game, I'd say. Wasn't happy with overall my performance. 3-3. We were 2-0 up at half time. We nearly were throwing this game away here. Heading to extra time, Johnny. Like, I didn't want to talk about this, but Colin, thank you for bringing it up. Missed the chance in the 88th minute to win it.
What sort of chance?
I was stretching and I tried to flick it past the keeper, but I was just too tired. I couldn't get there properly in time. Not fit enough. Mm. And then 92nd minute, get the ball 30 yards out. Take a nice touch past the defender. I look up. I'm thinking, feck it.
You're having one here.
I'm going to have one here. Belted it. Curled into the top bins. Top corner.
Oh, that's
4-3. 4-3 win. We didn't even have to have extra time.
So didn't even mention that.
To all the Cavan Town lads out there, commiserations, but it was actually a good game.
It was important to mention, like, this is a day in the life of Shane Hannan.
It's a very talented family, it has to be said.
Well, listen,
I mean, we've had it before, but...
Well, listen.
You obviously can play a bit.
We're delighted, so congrats to all the Town lads. We've a cup final to look forward to, so... Always fun, yeah.
So that, I presume that's like Ulster Cup then, is it?
No, it's a Premier Cup in the Monaghan Cavan League.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so
Monaghan Cavan is like the Merge League.
So,
any sign of a League of Ireland team to emerge?
I'd love to see one, Johnny.
Yeah.
I'd love to see one in the area back again. But because I used to be a ball boy, as you know, in Monaghan United, with the cows in the background. It was one of those famous pitches, Gorty Keegan. That's where we played last night, actually, Gorty Keegan.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So,
did anyone record this? You hit top bins.
That's what I said.
Anyone out there?
Proof,
we want proof of Shane Hannan. A winner in the top corner of Gert Keegan, that would mean a lot to me.
Well, if anyone has if anyone who was at the match as a spectator has a video, please send it my direction. Not because I have an ego or anything. Maybe I do.
I'd love to see a video of like scoring a great goal. Any goal, actually.
Yeah. It's like, you know, all the TVs that are outside the office here, just it playing on a loop so that everyone throughout the building can see Shane Hannon.
Oh, fantastic.
You never mentioned it, like, all morning. We've been here, like, all morning. You never mentioned
modest
it.
Guy,
I like
Johnny.
That. I like
modest
that.
Guy,
it was
you know?
A surprise in the running order for you. It was a little surprise.
Yeah. I'd be all over it.
Little nugget. Yeah. I'm on a scoring spree. My manager said to me before the match, you're on a bit of a spree at the minute. Mm-hmm. Little as you know, I've scored in the last 8 games.
Wow.
Straight. So, Johnny, I know where the onion bag is.
Yeah.
That's my phrase that I've come out with a thousand times in this show.
We've gone with the strongest segment, so on to the second strongest, the Milan derby.
Oh, the second most important match last night, the Champions League semi-final. Decent game.
It was alright. Like Inter, I sat down to watch this, really looking forward to having watched the Milan derby in a long time. It's the first time they met each other in Champions League since 2005, and they played each other in the 2003 semi-final, which AC Milan won. But Milan were going into this game feeling very inferior to their neighbours.
What's that about?
I don't know, because there's only one place and 2 points between them in Serie A, but Inter are considered the far better team, and they showed it. Like, they flew out of the traps. Two Premier League cult heroes, Henrik Mkhitaryan, Edin Dzeko, giving Inter a 2-0 lead.
It's such a throwback when I saw Mkhitaryan's name on the...
He's a player now, I'm very upset it didn't work out for him in the Premier League. Both at Manchester United and then Arsenal.
He scored in the Europa League final for United, didn't
he? Yeah, he was decent, but like, he was at the club at the wrong time. Like, you know, like, I think he'd be better off now. But a fine player, great finish, great... dummy work by Dzeko for that goal as well. He dragged the defenders away. Good finish. But as you said, like the Dzeko finish.
Oh, poacher.
Pure instinct and direction. They could have gone 3-0 up, smacked the post as well.
Calhanoglu's a
general Milan hero for both sides over the years. Now, in fairness, AC were much better in the second half. Tonali hit the post.
Yeah.
That could have made it interesting. But I can't help but feel, I don't know about you, that it's going to be an Inter-Madrid final. I think Madrid will do City. I think they'll do City
at
next
the end,
week.
That's an interesting show.
No, I really do. I think Madrid are going to do City. And I think very disappointingly it's going to be an Inter-Madrid final.
Disappointingly? It could be a decent
on paper. Final. Yeah, who knows? I mean, I'll wait to see it. But
Man City have been far better at home than... I thought the other night I gave Madrid a great chance. And City were heavy favourites to win the game, which I thought was questionable. But they've been far better at home. And I think they'd be very happy with 1-1. I don't think Real are actually that good. I just think they're very well coached.
Oh, totally.
They're reliant on three players with an average age of 35. And we talk about Dzeko, but Cruz, Modric and Benzema are 33, 35 and 37 respectively.
Incredible.
And it's mad that they're able to compete at that level, but City at home...
I would say they're the kind of players that their age doesn't really matter in this...
It should. Like, how is Modric at 37 able to play at that tempo? It's incredible.
He's generational talent though.
He is.
I mean, like you're saying, like, I don't think it's the age. Like, he's conditioned so well that it's kind of irrelevant. And also, he's not like... up and down all day for you.
True.
You know, that's not his biggest part of the game. He can do that.
It's
absolutely
not irrelevant, though. At 37, asking incredible, incredible outlier to be able to play at that level at 37.
LeBron James is 37. Lakers lost the Warriors last night, by the way.
Dzeko's 37.
Yeah.
It's mad. Mkhitaryan's 34.
I think, is football going to get to the
They're
point?
The oldest scorers in a knockout Champions League game, actually, the two
right?
of them. Yeah.
Do you feel like sports science is going to get to the point where, like, in 50 years' time, you'll have players who are, I don't know, what, 45? And still playing
100%.
Like non-goalkeepers, I mean.
They're going to be playing into their 40s.
Yeah.
Mm.
Look how fit these people are. Like, even look at the GAA.
Yeah.
After the match, like, if they'd be taken off the top or whatever, like, the conditioning of these players, like...
Ridiculous.
Compared to
20 years ago, where they just simply weren't.
Mm.
You know, you could just see that they didn't do any extra work in the gym. And you would say that for professional sport in England, like, 10 years ago, look at the players' bodies, like, they're just not anywhere near what they're like now. These people live like the perfect monk style life where it's just football consuming.
No crack all the time. Like, I mean, there's no crack.
I'd say the peak to play would have been about 20 years ago, where you would have made a bit of money,
you know,
and you're also able to enjoy yourself.
Yeah. When we were younger, you know, when we were collecting those stickers and stuff, I thought of footballers are real professional. I was listening to the Keith Tracy podcast that you recommended to me. I finished it on Talking Bollocks, and it was very, very good.
Mm.
Very, very good. It's 2 hours in duration. If you haven't listened, Colin recommended it to me, and I literally listened to it in two one-hour segments, and it was unbelievable, the stories from it. And there was one point where he was talking about the drinking sessions that they would have got up to at, which was it, Blackburn? But he said that the drinking went on at, like, even as late as 2008, 2009. And I was thinking at that period, footballers are ultra professional, but he was like, well, not fully. They were in the physio room and players were absolutely loaded. You know what? Just waking up the next morning after a night out and going in and getting the physio, still drunk.
I like Paul Joyce after the Sligo win, just saying, yeah, the lads, of course, we'll enjoy it. You know,
yeah.
It's just being kind of treat them like, you know,
human beings.
Human beings.
Adults.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you celebrate last night? You
know? I was quite one last night, John. Yeah. Fortunately, the midweek games don't lend themselves to the. For the proper celebration.
When's the final?
We don't know yet. It'll be the next couple of weeks.
Can we get a camera on it?
We should actually, yeah. Yeah.
Actually, that'd be a
good
reporters
show. As well.
Yeah. Jesus, the pressure will be on then.
It'll be a nice little AM day out, night out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We need to take the stuff on the road, like, you know.
True.
The people want it. Sorry, can I just mention one thing before we move off to
the Grand
Derby? Thank you. The Martinez penalty incident.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Did you see that? Did everyone see this? Like,
that's what Steve McManaman said, in fact. Wow, when the referee was walking
and that's
over.
What I want to talk about is the reaction to it, right? So, like, It looked like a penalty watching it live, but the referee made the right decision. Then the ref's told, I think you need to go look at this. And fair play to the ref. He was like, actually, I got that wrong.
Yeah.
And then you watch it back and you're like, yeah, you did get it wrong. And he corrected it. Now, Phil Egan made the point this morning in the office, if that was in the Premier League, I bet you it wouldn't have been overturned. I bet you it would have been like, okay, we better keep calm and carry on.
Too stubborn.
Yeah. BT Sport, in the halftime break, I thought they focused too much on that incident alone and didn't talk about the football. And this is a running theme at the moment in analysis of games. People are obsessed with incidents and don't actually talk about the tactical nuance of a game.
Yeah.
You know, obsessed with what actually happens. And the whole complaint at halftime by Stephen Gerrard and everybody else in the studio was, why did the ref go to VAR?
Yeah.
But that's the whole point of VAR.
He never even he didn't touch
it. It was brilliantly used. Yeah. I think everyone was happy with that decision.
Unnamed LOI official, I was just DMing him on Instagram yesterday, goes, with a bit of luck, the push comes to get VAR in eventually in the League of Ireland. I was like, I did not expect an official to say that, because I don't want VAR in the League of Ireland. Like,
don't want VAR in
League of Ireland. No, because, say, like, Shamrock Rovers and Bowes, like, on Friday, that was a game where VAR would have definitely helped Bowes. But, like, I like the fact that officials make the decisions. I like the fact that human error is still
You wouldn't
there.
Like it if Galway United were in a promotion playoff. And
absolutely irrelevant. No.
Why is that irrelevant?
It doesn't matter. It's just like, you can't pick, like, oh, my club. It's like, I don't like VAR in general. I think it's taken the...
What about goal line technology?
Yeah, that's fine.
I wonder, will it be implemented?
Yeah,
take a bit of technology, obviously, and a bit of money, but sure.
Yeah,
I was thinking, like, even, like, look at some of the WSL stadiums, which aren't that far off, some of the sizes of the League of Ireland stadiums, and, like, for them, they're saying it's, like, 7+ years off getting VAR in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, like, most of them are, like, there's not a hope. There'll probably be more games in the men's side of things than there will be, like, in the clubs and
Jesus,
in the
on
stadiums.
Paper, you think it's such an easy thing to implement, but obviously I don't know what.
Well, because you need, like, the cameras, and you need the facilities to set up the cameras there, and then you also need somewhere to put the VAR. In the same way, you know, like, the TMO has a room in rugby or whatever, you need someone to put them there, you need to make sure that all the technology works, then you need someone to oversee the technology on the day. Like, you say VAR, but there's actually 5 or 6 different people behind it.
Yeah.
But it's had so many iterations already, where now, like, we're at the stage where stuff is, like, let go probably too easily, and it's gone from one extreme to the other. I just like the old-fashioned way. Just let the referee decide. Let the linesman or lineswoman decide. If they get it wrong, they get it wrong. So what? Move on.
Yeah. You must be delighted with Virgin Media's decision.
I am. And, like, it was interesting with Virgin, when Virgin did Shamrock Rovers Bowes, it did it relatively on the cheap. Like, and I've done work for Virgin. It's a commercial operation, and, like, it doesn't have the money that RT has from license fees, so it has to do things in a way to make money. And I've absolutely no problem if Virgin doesn't show the League of Ireland, because it has no remit to show the League of Ireland. It can show whatever it wants. It has to make money. And it seems that it was happy enough with the Bowes Rovers game to do it with the kind of the video access it already has, have a studio, don't overspend. It still came across very well, and show 5 more games. And Virgin around the game did so much, like, you know, they brought the weatherman out to Daily Mount, and the League of Ireland is quite insecure now. It's kind of coming out of that, but there was so much love for Virgin because it was showing us love. And I'd love if TG Carr did the same thing.
Yeah.
TG Carr seems to show every game under the sun. I don't see why he can't show a League of Ireland game and do it relatively on the cheap like Virgin, because I think it would get the same love. But yeah, I'm delighted, and, you know, it gave an opportunity for more people in the studio as well to see, like, to get their name kind of out in the League of Ireland circle. And the League of Ireland is very, very watchable at the moment. Like, forget about Shane Hannan and Gertie Keegan. This stuff is top bins. Like, it is very watchable.
I never want to hear that sentence uttered again in the studio.
Which sentence?
Forget about Shane Hannan and Gertie Keegan.
Yeah. We'll never forget.
No, never forget.
I have one more recommendation for you before I go.
Here we go.
Richard Harris's book by Joe Jackson. This follows on the Big Night recommendation via Cameron Hill. Fantastic.
If you want Richard Harris in Big Night? No?
No.
Oh, sorry, that was just
no, but it's just a culture, it's cultural week here.
OTBAM Culture Club is now
a new section. I'm a big Richard Harris fan.
Sort of get that out there.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, the Milan Derby second leg next week. Rafael Leao's absence as well for AC was a big blow, I have to say. Certainly could have turned. I love the giant banner on display as well. I was trying to find a translation for it. The devil's face that the AC fans had. It says, "Hell is empty. All the devils are here." But Jesus, that's intimidating.
Yeah.
In Italian, of course.
You won't get that at the Etihad.
You certainly don't get that at the Etihad. Or go to Keegan either. But yeah, AC nil, Inter 2. So just time to bring you what's going to come up between now.
You are calling it that it's Madrid beaten.
Yeah, Madrid Inter, I think.
Shane, you're not having that, are you?
I'm not having that. No, I'd like to see.
Madrid.
We're going Madrid. I'm going to go Madrid as well. Anyway, here's what's coming up between now and 10 o'clock on the show this morning. We've got Gilly Flaherty coming up in around 15 minutes' time, talking the WSL last night. Big wins for Arsenal and for Chelsea. 20 past 8, the hurling power rankings with our own Will O'Callaghan. John Duggan back in studio with us at 8:40 as well. John Ryan, the former Munster and Ireland star at 8:50. Ger Brennan will be with us, as well as Darren Clark, the former Dublin and Louth players respectively, to preview the Leinster Senior Football Final this weekend. That is at 10 past 9. We're talking the Oakland A's from half past nine, which is from last night's show. It's OTBAM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now. Kathleen, you were with Vera Powell during the week and you managed to see the Women's World Cup trophy in person.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool event. It was over in Irish Town yesterday. They had the World Cup trophy there. They had blitzes for loads of schoolgirls. So there's a picture on screen now for anyone who's watching of Abby Larkin and Vera Powell with the trophy. And it was just a really nice atmosphere. They were like, you know, all the girls were excited. They were running up to Abby Larkin and Olivia O'Toole, the legend that she is, was there as well. And when I was standing talking to Olivia and this one little girl came up to her and she was like, "Olivia, my coach asked me to ask you, how do you score so many goals?" And it's just like, it was just a really nice atmosphere and, you know, a good way to set up the excitement ahead of the World Cup. Olivia O'Toole was also great. I love her. She's so funny. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like loitering around the World Cup trophy and she was like, "Kathleen, stand in there now and get your picture taken," like with the official photographers. And I was like, "Olivia, they don't want a picture of me. Like, they want a picture of you." And she was like, "Nope, you've done a lot of coverage. You deserve to stand in there and have your moment." And I was like, "That's so nice." But yeah, it was really interesting chatting to Vera as well at the event. So I don't know how much you guys have been following this, but there's been a bit of controversy in the lead up to the World Cup where the European Club Association has said that players shouldn't be released until 10 days before the tournament starts, which is difficult because that's also the same day that most players are supposed to be flying out. You know, generally you get about 2 weeks before a tournament. It's kind of the same in the men's game. And Vera Powell had some very strong comments on it, which we have to play for a clip for you all now. There was talk from the European Clubs Association about releasing players within international windows only. Is that something you're concerned about in terms of the squad?
I'm really concerned. It's not been wise of the European Club Association to say it like that. There's players that do not have any football for 11 weeks. If you would only release them on the 10th of July with a 10-hour jet lag going to Australia, you can put your ambulances next to the stadium to transport them to hospital with ACLs. So what they say, the safety of players, they need to ask the experts first before they come out with something. What they have to say, and that is what I want to give to them, is every single player needs to have at least 2 weeks of rest before you build up again. That makes sense, and that is something that they should say, not the release of 10th of July with finishing leagues now last week, because there's players 11 weeks without football. It's crazy, and it's just a panic reaction on the base of all the injuries in England. They should look at their own clubs, at the training methods. Why do Chelsea not have it, and why do other clubs have it? That is what they need to find out.
That's interesting. Vera never afraid to give her opinion.
Yeah, definitely a woman who isn't afraid of making a statement. It is interesting because, like, she does have a point in that, say, the championship has just finished up in England, and so take our players that are in Birmingham or London City Lionesses, you know, your Louise Quinn, Lily Ag, they have no football now until the next international window. And she, it wasn't played in that clip, but she said a little bit later on that last week the FAI were forced to write to every single individual club of all the potential people who will be in the squad and just say, like, look, this is outlining, this is what we want to do with the squad. This is how your players are going to be treated. This is our plans. And she was like, you know, normally you'd have conversations with the clubs anyways around those sort of things, but this just required that extra level when they're in the middle of their World Cup prep. Like she was saying that they're already shipping all their stuff out to Australia this week, which I was like, oh, that's mad. I keep thinking it's ages away, and then I realise
it's week.
Yeah, that it's not actually that far away. So yeah, it's been interesting. She is very much of the opinion that this is just a knee-jerk reaction to the ongoing ACL crisis in the game. She mentioned Chelsea there. Emma Hayes has like come out and she has said that, you know, something does need to be done, but kind of didn't really lie down on either side of what that is. Mm. Personally, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially for the European clubs who are, you know, going to be dealing, or the European players who are going to be dealing with, you know, jet lag. If you're sending them out 10 days before the tournament, they haven't had any football in like several weeks. It does just sound like a recipe for a disaster, in my mind anyways.
So it's during the off-season, the pre-season for the clubs.
Yeah.
So why do they care when the players are sent off?
I think they're thinking more of the top leagues necessarily than they are, say, something like the Championship. So the WSL still has another like couple of rounds left to grow. So they are going to have less time to chill ahead of the World Cup, and there still is another international window before they're let go for the official World Cup one. You know, the way Ireland are playing Zambia and France. So I think that's part of it, but also it just, I feel like that's the sort of thing where there has to be something better than saying to players, you're only allowed to leave your club literally the day you have to fly to, or from your club's remit, the day you fly out to Australia. Like, I can't imagine players like Katie McCabe are all that happy with that as a way of prepping for a World Cup. Like, I know she'll probably be doing stuff herself, but as the captain of the team as well, I'm sure she probably wants to be in that atmosphere and, you know, getting people together. So there's going to be nerves as well. It's our first World Cup. I'm talking about this specifically from an Ireland point of view.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's going to be nerves. There's going to be players who have never played in front of those sort of crowds. You know, closest is probably the girls in England who have played in FA Cup finals and stuff. They're going to need that time to get their heads around everything. And, yeah, I don't know. I do get what the ECA are saying, and that there should be protections to players so that we don't have, say, like a situation with the Men's World Cup where, you know, that was in the middle of a season and it was a lot of players have said since then that they're absolutely wrecked and it's taken a big toll on their body and their mental health. I totally get there should be protections. I'm just not sure if the ECA are going about this the right way at the moment.
I just hope that they maybe see sense, but also that if they don't see sense, then the Irish team can just forget about it, because you can let this fester and get into your head ahead of a tournament. And you see even the likes of, say, the French men's team in 2010, like, if something small can get into a camp and you can let it bother you and annoy you and not let it go. But I guess it's the same for everyone. It's the only thing.
Yeah, it is the same for everyone, but also I don't, because technically all the work that the ECA does with like FIFA and international federations, it's all kind of based on understanding, or like memorandums of understanding. So they have a memorandum of understanding with FIFA, which is a signed document, but it's not 100% binding, you know. It's kind of based on people's goodwill. So it makes me wonder, you know, is there a possibility that, say, players can't, say, England, like, most of them are playing in England, based in England. Is there a chance that they can bop up and down to St. George's Park in that time, but the Irish players aren't given that same opportunity? Or, you know, if Lyon say to their players, oh yeah, you can all go off, we don't mind, you take it as a holiday, go to your international body, we don't mind. There is a little bit of room for disparity there, depending on how a club reacts to it.
So
it's one of those things. I don't know how big of an impact it may or may not have. It strikes me as something that at the end of the day they're going to have to talk to the players and be like, well, what do you want? and maybe trust in that. And I know you can't always trust a player. The ongoing argument was, say, HIA or something that players just want to play through injury. So like I said, I don't know what the right thing is, but I do think Vera has a point when she says that it doesn't sound particularly healthy to for players to be coming in and having to fly out straight away, go straight into a camp. There's possibly going to be a warm-up game over in Australia in those 10 days against another World Cup side for Ireland. That's still to be confirmed, but there's a potential that that's going to happen. So you fly out, you have 2 or 3 days to recover jet lag, you haven't played football in 11 weeks, and you're expected to play a game, and then go into the biggest game of your career in front of 80,000 people, the host nation. I mean, like, I'm getting jitters just thinking about it, and I don't actually have to do it.
In the Southern Hemisphere as well, there's so much to take in for that team. Like, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Oh, 80,000 people. A lot of Irish people, like, as well.
Yeah, I think the general consensus seems to be that the crowd is going to be pretty, you know, 50-50. Right. Or if not 50-50, 60-40, which is pretty good considering how far away Australia is. Like, I was talking to Jonathan Hill yesterday, the head of the FAI, and he was saying that they've had so much contact from groups down in Australia, either like AFL clubs, like GAA clubs, just general Irish Australian groups down there, all trying to organise like watch parties and being like, is there any chance we could get like one of the players to turn up at some stage to like come say hello or give a training session or whatever it is. Obviously their full focus is on the games, but you can understand why people are like, they're down here, we might as well chance our arms.
They just want a piece of it.
Yeah, so he was saying that it's been the response down there almost already has, it's almost made more of an impact down there than they're seeing up here at the moment, which I thought was kind of interesting. But I think it's the sort of thing with, say, the trophy was at the Mansion House yesterday for 3 hours as well. So anyone could go in and see it and get their photos taken. And there's lots of events starting to pop up. I mean, there's one tonight for Off the Ball in the Square Ball that Jura is hosting with Anya O'Gorman and Linda Gorman, who was on the original women's national team. So, you know, there's lots of exciting things starting to happen and starting to get that hype train going.
That 1973 team were in, I know you spoke to them as well, Kathleen, the last week. They're on the Late Late Show as well. They were doing the rounds talking about the historic first game in, for an Irish women's team. I remember there was one of them that spoke on the Late Late Show as well about, she said she watches a lot of this current team and she feels confident they could get out of the group. Like, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but is there actually a chance we could get out of the group?
I think everyone is kind of basing it on if we can get a result, so like a win or a draw against Australia in that first game, that probably is what any success for this team hinges on. Because, and of course it had to be the first game against Australia. Because if we can do that and if we can get a result against Nigeria, then there is a possibility. And also, chances are, if that happens, we'll be coming second in the group and probably facing England in the next round. Fantastic. Which would be, you know, be pretty iconic if it did happen. It's interesting because I was asking Vera yesterday, I was like, oh, you know, I'm sure she's coached so many different teams, like lifting that trophy that you're standing beside now has probably always been a dream. And I was like, is there any chance we might see that in Australia? And she just shut it down straight away. I was kind of asking, being a bit funny, like, I don't really think there's a chance of it either. But it was almost like straight away, she was like, no, that's not the aim of what we're going for. She was like, we're focused on the group. We are focused on that first game, getting a result and going from there. And there was no talking about anything else.
How did they approach the game against Australia?
I think they're
going. Stop Sam Kerr.
Yeah, stop Sam Kerr is probably going to be the main one. Like, this Australia team has been on a very similar journey to this Irish team in that they've had potential for so long and they haven't really been able to tap into it. And literally around the same time that Vera Powell came into Ireland, Tony Gustavsson came into Australia and has slowly just been chipping away at the team and building the team that he wants in the same way that Vera's been doing it. And they're only, I would say, in the last like 6 to 8 months starting to really hit their stride, which of course is great timing for us. We're delighted to see it. And there's real optimism in Australia that this team can, you know, go all the way. So number one is going to be stopping Sam Kerr. But I also think if Ireland want to get something out of this group, we really need to sort out how we're going to attack, because we can't just depend. When they have someone like Sam Kerr, you have to assume that she is going to get a goal. And she's not the only... I mean, if Caitlin Ford is out at the moment, if she's fit again, she's also very, very nifty at getting a goal. There's a couple of options we need to shut down there, and I think we need to look at it as, like, we can't just throw everyone behind the ball and hope that we don't concede. I think we need to sort out that front option. Leanne Kiernan back on the bench for Liverpool at the weekend. Hopefully, there's so few games left, but hopefully she gets a bit of playing time, because I really think she could be a good option. I do think we're getting closer. I definitely think the US games showed us that we're getting closer. It's just the finishing. Really need to sort that out. Shane, you wouldn't go in there and just give them a few pointers?
I know, yeah, 30 yards top in. We'll take that against Australia, wouldn't we, the first game? Absolutely. Last minute. Any result will do, to be honest. We'll take a draw. You mentioned Caitlin Ford there. Nice segue into Arsenal last night in the WSL, Kathleen.
It was a night of games being over by the first 20 minutes.
Kind of boring, but like, yeah, because all of Arsenal's action was in the first half, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then Chelsea as well were like 2-0 up after 11 minutes and went on to win 6-0. So it was just, yeah, a general night for games being over very early. But yeah, great performance from Arsenal. Great to see Blackstenius get those two goals. And also very good to see Pelova scoring as well. One of those players that when she signed, I was really excited for. Knew she wasn't going to be a first team player initially, because of the team that we had. She came last summer. But one of those really exciting young talents. And then just with the way Arsenal season has gone, they've been so dependent on these younger players. I mean, I looked at our bench for Wolfsburg, and I think out of the five players that were on there, four of them had never put on a senior jersey. Like, jeez, that's the general level of injury that they have at the moment. Frida Manum as well has really stepped up. She got her second goal in two games there last night. But yeah, I think Brighton have been on like a tiny bit of a resurgence under Melissa Phillips, who was at London City Lionesses and nearly brought them to promotion into the WSL, and then weirdly left to go to Angel City a couple of weeks ago, and then turned up at Brighton again. So I'm not entirely sure what happened there, but she has brought them on a bit of a resurgence. So I didn't go into this match thinking it was going to be a complete easy walk. I thought Arsenal would win, but I didn't expect it to be quite as overwhelming as it was. Nice assist from Katie McCabe as well for Stina.
Yeah.
Blackstenius' first goal. Very classic Katie scrambling up the wing and then just in over the top of Blackstenius' head. So
what's
more
Katie's role against Australia? Where does she play?
Where does she play, or where do I want her to play? Two different questions.
If you're Stephen Kenny, right? Stephen Kenny just takes the job for the day from Vera Powell. He's going to say to Katie McCabe, he's going to say to all the Irish players, we can actually beat these, but we're not going to play conservative for 90 minutes. So is she thinking we just have to stop Australia and hope that we nick one like from a set piece, or I'm going around about, but like, yeah, where, because then you have to utilise Katie McCabe in an attacking sense and say you have to hurt them here, as opposed to like we have to sit behind the ball for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think it. I would have said that Vera would have played conservatively, but then in the US, they didn't play conservatively. And like, I know we didn't win the games, but like, the results were pretty good. If we had converted some of those blooming chances, like, we had so many chances. It actually still irks me that we didn't manage to convert more of them. So I think if she lines up like that against Australia, I would be happy, even if they didn't get the win, because I was like, at least we're going out to win it. But I have a feeling that, I don't know, it also depends on the squad she brings and who she decides to bring, because she's had big squads and all those, so she's been able to move around and play a little less conservatively, but she only has 23 to bring to Australia. So
that's horrible for those, obviously, that are on the fringes.
Tough decisions for a manager to make, I tell
you. That is horrible.
We're gonna pick back up on WSL in just a second, but OTBM at 8:04 a.m. approaching on this Thursday morning with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now. During this short ad break, this week's episode of the Koi Gig Podcast, Emma Byrne, Karen Duggan and Kathleen talked about Reading, bottom of the WSL table, and their significant midfield issues. The Koi Gig Pod on OTB is in association with Cadbury FC, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. After the ad break, Julie Flaherty on Arsenal and Chelsea from last night in the WSL.
OTB AM.
The Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball.
8:07 on Thursday morning's OTB AM with ourselves, and we're going to continue the WSL chat from last night now. And delighted to welcome Gillie Flaherty, former WSL star, to the show as per usual. Gillie, good morning. How are things?
Good, thank you. How are you?
All good. Thanks for hopping on as usual. We might start with the Arsenal match. We were just touching on it there before the ad break. Dominant performance, 4-0 win at Brighton, takes them back up to third in the WSL standings. An impressive performance overall. Kathleen here was mentioning Victoria Pavlova and her performance, particularly dropping into midfield when Leah Valti was ruled out through illness in the warm-up. A really impressive performance overall from Arsenal, and Pavlova especially.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Arsenal dominated from minute one. Blackstenia should have had a hat-trick probably within the first 20 minutes. She was ruled offside when you're looking back at the replay. She wasn't offside. And then she had another chance with a header to get... She should have really had four goals in the first half. I mean, Arsenal were... they were just on it. They were hungry from minute one. Obviously, with Valti coming out in the warm-up, Jodie Taylor come in, we were sort of a bit like, what's he going to do? Is he going to drop Cole or Pavlova deeper with Marnham, which he done. Obviously, Pavlova sat in with Marnham. And I mean, I think she was brilliant there because she was able to get the ball from the defence and get the ball quickly up the pitch for Arsenal. But she's been such a star for him this year, being able to step in. Obviously, there's been a lot of injuries at Arsenal when there's younger players that have come in or players that potentially might not have played a lot of minutes who have now stepped up and are playing really well. But for me, Arsenal were just the hungrier team from minute one last night.
Welcome return for Caitlin Ford from injury as well, which Jonas Eideval will be pretty happy with that for those last three games of the season. It's a big boost.
Yeah, and I mean, it seemed like he didn't really want to make that substitution because obviously Gio come off. She was a sub that come on. She went in for a tackle and she come off with holding her hamstrings. I hope that's something too serious. But obviously then Caitlin Ford come on. There's obviously you got the game midweek next week, which will be a great chance for Caitlin Ford to get more minutes going into the Chelsea game on the weekend. So, yeah, she's huge for him. And I think she has been a big loss because she likes to travel with the ball. She brings pace. She brings that experience. But again, you're looking at that. The way they played last night, the players that come in, they've done a fantastic job.
Do you think it's fair to say, Gillie, that Arsenal probably outperformed themselves and beyond what most expectation would be of them, considering the lineups that they've had to put out due to injuries over the last couple of weeks? Even look at, say, City's performance at the weekend, and they've had a relatively settled like bench and team for the last couple of weeks, and you wouldn't have expected that sort of performance, whereas Arsenal seemed to, I know they didn't get the win in the Champions League, but they fairly put up a fight when you consider the sort of players that were at their disposal.
Yeah, and I've always thought that Arsenal's weakness would have been their bench, really, because you're looking at the likes of Chelsea, that you take, for example, their game against Everton, Sam Kerr gets injured and they're able to call Pernille Harder off the bench in the first 30 minutes. Like, she's an incredible player. You've got Erin Cuthbert on the bench, you know, in that game that you're able to bring on. Those players are the players that normally are starting. So Chelsea do have that, where I think Arsenal would have that if they hadn't had so many injuries as what they've had. So I'd say with Arsenal, what you're seeing really is the strength of the team, you know, the togetherness. That's what's pulling them through. And players are stepping up. They're talking about Jennifer Beattie, for example, who has been really mainly a squad player all season. Then due to obviously the injury to Leah has come in and comes in for a Champions League semi-final and plays extremely well. And you're seeing that last, obviously the last couple of games she's cramped up, but those players now are those are the players that are starting and they're taking it by the horn. They've been fantastic and they've really showed their leadership qualities too and stepped up when the teams needed it. But I feel like with Arsenal, they're just never say die attitude, but they just know how to win. And I thought last night's game might be a bit more difficult for them, how Brighton have been playing in the recent weeks, but they just showed their class last night.
I guess it gives an opportunity to some younger players, as Kathleen mentions. Gillie, like even last night, you see Freya Godfrey, a debut for her and a first WSL appearance of the season for Taya Goldie, both 18 years of age. So I guess all the injuries have been terrible for Arsenal this season, but then the flip side of it is all of a sudden you get appearances and minutes into the legs in the WSL for young players that otherwise wouldn't have got them.
Yeah, and that's what I say as well. When obviously with me, I got chucked into playing senior football quite young, but I was only really given my chance at Arsenal because I was 18 at the time, but every other, or 17, every other centre back in front of me was injured. There was no one else possible that could play centre back. So Vic Akers, my manager at the time, had no choice but to play me. I was the only one fit and available. And, I mean, I was lucky enough that I was able then to secure my place and stayed in the team, really. But it is, I mean, injuries are there's a positive and a negative spin to injuries. Obviously, negative is you're losing the top players like Viv, you're losing Mead, Kim, Leah for such a long time. But the positive is without those injuries, could you potentially have been seeing Marnham play the way she's played this year? Would you have seen Palova come in and play as many minutes as what she had? And especially the youngsters getting a chance off the bench, because if those players were fit, those youngsters might not even be making the bench in the first place. And the best way to get experience is by be given the opportunity to play. And when obviously you're 4-0 up at half time, you can then afford to make those changes and give players the opportunity.
The difference, Julie, since you came in as a kid compared to the kids coming in now, what's the difference coaching wise in terms of like the ages that they started and like the technical coaching, I suppose, that they've had compared to your time?
The youngsters now are going into a full time environment. They're obviously going, whether it be the academies that have been set up, or they're going straight into getting a pro contract with the first team. They're in a full-time environment, so they're getting that exposure. Whereas with me, when I went to Arsenal when I was 15, I was only training two nights a week and playing on a Sunday. and it's mad to think then that we won the Champions League then, you know, being a semi-pro team. So, yeah, I mean, the exposure that's there for them is a lot higher. They get to work a lot more with coaches. And I mean, I know at my time at Liverpool and my time at West Ham, especially with the youngsters, there was real dedicated time. If a youngster said, I want to work on this, or I want to work on that, coaches had things set up for them. And there was a lot more now of reviewing games and watching back training sessions and working on IDPs, so like your individual training plans. Or development programs, things like that, which we didn't have back then. So it's frightening now, I think, to see how far the game's going to go with players being able to get that opportunity. But yeah, they've got it all at their feet.
Have you got any regrets in that regard?
Well, I wish I was born now. I'm thankful because I've been part of an era that had to work. And then I was blessed with the opportunity to be a professional footballer. So I feel like I've got that humble side of me that went from that and become the pro. And I'll always be grateful for that. And I had to work for everything. So, I love the fact that I got to do both. It's exciting to see where the game will be in the next 5-10 years.
The other game last night, Jilly, was the Chelsea-Leicester match again. A bit of a pounding 6-0 victory for Chelsea. Emma Hayes spoke afterwards. She used the word clinical a couple of times and said the team maybe haven't been as clinical as she would have liked at different points of this season. They were certainly clinical last night, 3 up after 32 minutes. So that moves them a point behind Manchester United at the top with a game in hand, Chelsea. So there's to lose the title at this juncture.
Yeah, and I mean, the main thing as well from the last two games with Everton and Leicester is before them two games, Man United had such a big goal difference on Chelsea. And because of those results, now their goal difference is the same. So it's like now they've completely shut that. So whereas before you could see if it went down to the wire, United would have dominated Chelsea on goal difference and they could have won the league on that. Chelsea have bridged that gap, which was obviously really difficult to do. And in my opinion, I thought, again, Leicester was going to make Chelsea a lot more difficult than what they did. But when Chelsea are in the form that they're in and they've got that hunger, they've got that ruthlessness, you don't really want to be the team that's standing in their way. I didn't get to really see much of the game last night because obviously I was covering the Arsenal game. But I watched the game, or covered the game on Sunday against Everton. And they had the five shots on target they had in the first half. They had five goals. Like, that's so rare to see in any game of football. They were incredible. They were just ruthless and hungry. And I think it has cost them previous on in the season, not having that. But again, you're looking at the likes of Peniel Harder coming back. She brings so much to the team, and she's been out of the team since November, so she's been a big loss for them. But it just clicked at the right time for Chelsea. And for me, I can't see anyone else winning it but them.
I was going to ask you about Pernille Harder, because obviously she scored 3 goals in her last 2 games after coming back. Her first goals in 193 days. And then there was reports yesterday or the day before, just before they started playing, that she and Magda Eriksson might be off to Bayern Munich if they don't agree a contract with Chelsea this summer. How much of a loss would that be for Chelsea, considering that she's come back in and immediately started scoring? I was quite surprised when I saw Bayern Munich. I thought if they were going to go somewhere, it'd be somewhere different. But I know she has had a lot of good experiences in the Frauen Bundesliga before.
Yeah, I mean, she will be a huge loss because she offers so much. You can see her, I think she came on in the Champions League games, and I mean, you could tell she hadn't played. She didn't really get the ball, to be fair, coming up against Barcelona. She was just sort of chasing. And then obviously then when you look at the game against Everton, obviously when she came on, her first touch was a goal, and it was such a classy finish too. But she brings so much, and obviously, yeah, it's linked to Bayern Munich. She's been linked to Lyon, Real Madrid, the pair of them. So I think they'll go. I don't think they'll stay. But, I mean, both of them, I think Magda Eriksson as well, I think she's been a fantastic captain for Chelsea. She found it difficult as well because she was out of the team. And, again, she's come in, and her and Mara Mielde have been fantastic at the back with the 2 injuries to Buchanan and Millie Bright. So, yeah, I think not just on the pitch, off the pitch, I think they bring a lot to the club. So they will be a huge loss if they do decide to go. But this is Chelsea. If they know that they're going to go, they're going to bring in 2 recruitments as well to replace them. It's just the way football goes. But, yeah, they'll be a huge loss to Chelsea.
Looking down the table a little bit, like, the relegation battle has almost been as interesting as the title race, but just one that's kind of in the middle a little bit. West Ham haven't had a win in 9 games now, and there's been a bit of talk, you know, when Rhian Skinner went through a similar sort of loss in form, she left at Spurs. There's been other managers this year who've had the same runs, they've all gone. Do you think Paul Konchesky's time is kind of running out, or will he be given the summer to rebuild and come back again in September?
I'm not sure. And I'm glad, really, that you've mentioned it, because I feel like West Ham have sort of gone under the radar because of other teams that are doing bad in and around them. I think if they didn't have the points on board already before, obviously since December, really, since January, they've just had a really bad run and they've not really picked up many points, if any. Then if they hadn't put all them points on the board, then for me, they'd be in the relegation fight, and I would struggle to see them come out of it. And it's difficult to watch, because the West Ham that I know and that I played in, we were so hard to beat. You know, we worked well defensively. But it's just a shadow of that team, like basic defending errors. There don't seem to be much confidence in the camp. So, yeah, if you're looking at it, obviously, Paul Konchesky's got worse stats than what Rhian Skinner has. And obviously, she was lost her job. So you're looking at that. Should he really lose these? Should they make a change? I'm not too sure what the answer is down there, but I do know change needs to happen. Something needs to happen, because from West Ham standards and where, when I was there, what we built, that's not the same West Ham team that we was a part of, what I was a part of. So it's sad seeing. And you've got really good players there. You've got really good girls. They're good human beings, you know, and they deserve better. They deserve to play with confidence and to know that they're good players, you know. Not, you don't become a bad player overnight. So I hope that something changes down there and that they're able to push on and pick up results and points and go further up the table again and challenge.
Was there much fanfare about his appointment? Like, has this been a bit of a letdown?
No, I mean, obviously, I mean, Conch was my assistant last year. So I think he was a good number 2. I think he was a good assistant manager. He has been there before as a player, you know. He knows what players want. He knows what players feel. So he understands that side of the game. I just don't know if he thought maybe that women's football was going to be a bit, not easier, but obviously going in as a manager, I know he managed non-league in the men's side. I don't know if he thought it would be a bit more less stressful than maybe what it is. And the thing is with this league, it's a very tough league. Mm. Like it's in my opinion, it's the most competitive league in the world. So it is a difficult job to have, and one that if I didn't have grey hair, I would definitely have grey hair if I'd done that job. Like, that's, it is a stressful job. And there's, with the exposure on it from Sky and BBC and all media outlets looking at it now, people's jobs are on the line if there's no results. You could say the same about Kelly Chambers. Like, is her job on the line, really, looking at how Reading are? Will they potentially wait to see what happens at the end of the season and then make change? I think it's difficult now to say, well, yeah, if Kontrecki goes now, who's going to come in for the last few games? Do you know what I mean? It might be a decision at the end of the season where they say, no, we're going to stick with you and we're going to give you the chance of the summer to rebuild. Or they part ways and bring someone new in, because next season you can't have the same season as what you've had this year.
And Jilly, one final question for me, just in terms of Liverpool and that massive win that they had at the weekend. And they've come, you know, kind of important in the title race in terms of the win they had against Chelsea at the start of the season as well, and the potential to, you know, upset a few placements at the top of the table in the coming weeks. Where do you see them pushing on for the end of the season? And will Matt Beard be kind of happy with the season, or feel like there's still a lot left on the table for them?
I think with Beardy, he'll always strive to be better, and he'll always want Liverpool to be more. I do think if they're honest, their main target this year was to stay in the league, was to secure your safety. Obviously, you don't want to come up and be the team that goes back down again. If you're looking at their results, there's games that they've lost that they should have won, or that you're looking at, not should have won in the sense of they played better on the day, but in regards to how they are, what players they've got. Like, you're looking at Leicester, for example, they've lost twice to Leicester this year. The 4-0, that I think they deserve to lose that game. But in regards to you looking at the teams and around you, the teams that you're aiming for to get 3 points off of, or you're targeting, Leicester would have been one of those teams where they said, we want to get 6 points against Leicester. It sort of sounds like the best of the rest, you know, like, obviously you've got the top four, then the best of the rest underneath. I think, like, you're looking at the Villa home game. I mean, I played in that. We should never have lost that game. So again, you look at those areas that they would have felt that they'd dropped points where they could have been a lot higher. But I think if you're looking at it, you'd be honest and say the main thing this year was just safety in the league and securing your spot for next year and then able to push on. But I think Liverpool have been fantastic. I think they had a really good game against Chelsea midweek. I thought they should have got a draw. And then obviously then the Sunday's game, it could have been more goals as well, watching it. Liverpool had more chances as well to put more goals on the board. But yeah, they were brilliant. And that's a huge win for the club. You know, you're talking about the rivalry and that, to take 3 points off of City on your home ground. Like, there's not much better, I think, aside from getting it against Everton and probably United. But again, you got United at the end of the season. Like, that's not going to be an easy game for United. And I think it's going to be a different game to what the away game was when it was 6-0. So yeah, I'm chuffed for Liverpool. I'm chuffed for the girls and Beardy.
Jilly, great stuff as always. Thanks a million for hopping on this morning.
No way. See you later.
Great stuff. Jilly Flaherty there, the former WSL star, at 8:25 a.m. on Thursday mornings. O2BM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now. Keep your comments coming in. I did want to mention the NBA playoffs, because a lot of people would have maybe stayed up, although I think it was a 3 a.m. Irish time start, so possibly not.
You stay up, Shane, after your match I and probably driving could. Back from Monaghan this morning?
I nearly could have, because I was up so early. Got some of it live, but it didn't. But the Lakers lost game 5 to the Warriors, but they'd probably be a little bit concerned. An injury to Anthony Davis in that one. So 121 points to 106 to the Warriors last night. That's a 3-2 lead in the series still to the Lakers. Anthony Davis taken to the locker room in a wheelchair as a result of getting elbowed in the head during the fourth quarter. I think that the word out of there is that he will be okay. He had 23 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists at Chase Center last night in that one. It's best of 7. So first of 4, a 3-2 lead for the Lakers in that Western Conference semi-final. That's going to return for game 6 Friday night, so the Lakers will get another chance to get over the line. LeBron James, by the way, 25 points and 9 rebounds, and Steph Curry led the way for the Warriors with 27 points and 8 assists. So great to see two unbelievable talents at the top of their game last night. So we'll of course cover the NBA later on in the week, no doubt. Keep your YouTube comments coming in, because plenty of people, one person's commented on your jumper, Kathleen, and said it's a lovely colour.
That's very nice.
We were trying to decipher what colour. Was it yourself asking what colour it was?
No,
it was
Colum.
What would you, kind of like,
burnt orange is kind of what we settled on, yeah.
It's all the important issues we cover.
It's from the charity shop. I buy most of my clothes in charity shops.
That's Ooh. Cool.
Yeah, I say yeah. I buy them. My mom is a charity shop whiz.
That's really? Nice.
Yeah, so she studied textiles in college and she can like spot really beautiful designer pieces a mile off. So like this is Tommy Hilfiger, I think. Ah. €2. Something like that.
There has to be a little documentary done on this. Like,
yeah.
Mrs. McNamee like goes to find your value in a very ethical way.
Oh, yes. Like my mum will pick up something for a fiver, and there's this site called Vestiaire where they'll like say it's a bit like eBay, except they actually say, okay, yeah, that is a Prada, that is Chanel, whatever it is, that is a vintage 1973 Arsenal jersey, whatever you want it to be, they will verify it for you. And she's got like a couple of hundred for stuff she's picked up for like between 5 and 20 quid before.
This is so cool. What did you make of Colm's shirt this morning? I was having it, actually.
It was colourful.
Yeah. Well,
I was obviously a fan. I'm a fan of a dodgy shirt. I wouldn't call it dodgy. No, it was just a nice shirt.
It wasn't dodgy. No, it was colourful.
When I say dodgy shirt, I actually mean it as a compliment. I think dodgy shirt is something to lean into.
I wouldn't be qualifying your endorsement as an actual endorsement in the sense of some of the stuff you've worn.
Fair. Thank you, Johnny. Thanks very much, Johnny.
I don't think we need... I know we had Paul Galvin sponsoring the lads the other day.
Oh, yeah.
I need to get someone on board for myself and Nashling and the crew. But I think we need like some sort of dodgy shirt shop to come on board.
Sure. And a charity shop as well.
Does your mom come up to Dublin much?
Yeah, a fair bit. My dad works in Dublin some like a couple of days a week, so sometimes she pops up with him.
Do you remember how I put you up in my apartment for a month or something just to tie you over? So you're going to get me back in terms of a favour by bringing your mother along to bring me to charity shops because I actually don't shop anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I've become this old man that stopped buying clothes. Like in lockdown, I love shopping, but then in lockdown I kind of get out of the habit, and now I just don't do it anymore. So this will be my return.
Her favourite thing in the world is doing this, so I won't have to convince her. As long as there's a wee pint at the end of it for her, she'll be happy.
Fantastic. That's class. No,
that's like Carlsberg don't do, like, that's, I mean, it won't be.
It's actually inspired me to probably, because I pass a couple of charity shops on the way home, and I'm walking home after work, and I'm like, most of them, I'd love to hop in there, but no, never do.
There's a lot of really good ones there around like Capel Street and stuff.
Even so, Georgia Street there has a couple, I think. Definitely something I need to do more of, because my sisters are actually into that as well. A little bit of charity shop action.
What are your family not doing?
Oh, well, this is it, Johnny.
And your professionalism heads there. Not to turn up, like, you know, cross between drunk and hungover after getting a top bins winner in Gertie Keegan in a big game. Showed up this morning, professional.
That's what I'm all about, Johnny. Do you know, leader, captain of the team. You gotta just lead by example. I just want to touch on the West Ham match tonight as well. Izzy Alkmaar.
This is kind of sneaked up,
hasn't it?
Yeah.
Europa Conference League semi-final first leg. That's 8 p.m. tonight. Kickoff. The headline in the back of the Sun here, for example, is all hands on deck. Arsenal fear being priced out of a deal for £100 million. Rated Declan Rice signing the West Ham captain is their top priority this summer. And the Gunners
I feel like
are convinced.
That's been the headline about Declan Rice and Arsenal for the last like year.
It's one of those sagas that's just going to keep going on.
Yeah.
I'm sure Arsenal fans, Kathleen, will be fairly happy with Declan Rice. He's been playing brilliantly recently.
Yeah.
Well, the last couple of games he's been good.
No, definitely. So long as he's not like a ridiculous price tag, that would be my one fear, that we would take him in and maybe just wouldn't fit into the squad in the right way. But definitely one of the signings that I'd be happier to see come into the club.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. Of course, we'll look back on the West Ham match tomorrow morning's show. Myself and Adrian will be with you for tomorrow morning's OTPM. But we're continuing with Thursday morning's OTPM. Don't worry, we're not going anywhere. Kathleen, thanks a million for hopping in this morning.
Thanks to her mother. She's actually changed my life, and I've never even met her. Like, I mean, I'm just
you're inspired here. Yeah.
Two knicker for a really nice top. We don't know the colour of it, but £2.
We're going to go.
£2.
I know.
And I went to charity.
Burnt orange jumper for £2. Not bad. Folks, at 8:30 a.m. on this Thursday morning's OTBM, it is time for the Hurling Power Rankings.
Some of these critics, these pundits.
I absolutely adore them, lads. I have unbelievable time for them, but they're a great bunch, but it's not acceptable.
They like to play the hard man when they're on it. It's not very pleasant when you're trying to manage a team. All you're looking for is a bit of civility and a bit of decency, but they just dismiss you like you know, you have nothing to do with the bloody occasion.
Will O'Callaghan, very good morning.
Morning, lads. How are you getting on?
Keeping well. I'm sure this power ranking crack gives you sleepless nights, as it does Tommy Rooney.
No. Tommy takes the power rankings far more seriously than I do. In fact, I'd say Tommy and Rooney and I talk about the football power rankings more than we probably talk about anything else in our exchanges off air. So the problem is, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, Shane. I think the power rankings were so solid a month ago that you're going to see a lot of the teams are still in the same positions. Mm. So I think that actually speaks to how good the last round of the power rankings were. But it has been far too long since we've updated the hurling rankings. So delighted now that we've had three rounds of games in the senior championships and in the tiered competitions, particularly in the Joe McDonagh, where we'll talk about some of the teams at the start of this list, are now getting ready for the final round of group games. I think we've got a lot more evidence to base our power rankings on, but at the same time, James Scale has not spoken to me since I put the draft list in yesterday and he saw where Galway were. He literally has not spoken to me since 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
See, this is the thing, it causes arguments among friends. Do you know, people can fall out. It's one of the things when I'm out and about in Monaghan, for example. It's one of the things off the ball fans will say to me the most, the power rankings. What the hell were X doing in that position?
Because the whole the system of, you know, the hurling and football calendar is so, it's so much of an anachronism now, as we'll talk about. The power rankings actually have more weight because it's the only, Tommy and Will are the only people actually giving this a go. We don't have like actual rankings in the in the setup itself.
True.
So it matters. It actually does matter, and it's subjective.
Yeah, it's fair, and that's why Will puts the work in, I suppose. That's a good point, like, that we don't get seedings in hurling or Gaelic football, I suppose there's no need for them, but...
This is the seeding that, like, this is the only real seeding. Am I wrong, Will?
Well, obviously the seedings themselves, I'd say the league makes it a little bit easier, and that's always been the contention I think some supporters have had, where if somebody has a particularly good league campaign, why are we behind a team who perhaps Tommy, or in this case me in the hurling, has weighted previous achievements by teams, or maybe a certain amount of feel about where a team is by comparison to where they are. Otherwise we would have no power rankings, so we would just turn around and say, here are the league tables, have a look at them, that's the way the teams are ranked. In the hurling, obviously we've got the two round robin series back this season. So in a way that kind of produces a natural order of things at this stage, but as we're going to see, not all competitions are equal, and I think what we've seen in the Munster Championship so far could potentially be more of a pointer as to where the All-Ireland Series is going to go once the provincials are over. And I think it's clear at this stage that the standard in Munster has been higher than what we've seen in Leinster so far, but also taking into account that it's actually very hard to tell who's going to come out of the Munster Championship, and there are teams who currently sit inside the top five and at least one of them will not be playing beyond the provincial series. So you got to bear that in mind as well.
Well, I don't know how we want to do this, Will, but will I run through 18 to 11 and we'll come back to 18 because that's a new entry. It's quite interesting. Yep. So Meath at 18, a new entry. We have Down at 17, remaining the same. Kildare at 16, who are down. Kerry stay at 15. Carlow are up to 14. Leash down to 13. Offaly up to 12. And Westmeath stay firm at 11. So from my perspective here, Will, an interesting shout bringing in Meath here at 18.
Yeah, so Meath have had a very good start in the Christy Ring Championship. There's still a few twists and turns potentially before the final on that one, but Meath also won Division 2B of the league, so they have shown good form throughout. Derry, I think by their own admission, have had a bit of a disappointing campaign. They will still hope to try and win the Christy Ring Championship, but Meath have shown that bit more, and so therefore, since we spoke about a month ago in the last power rankings, I think it's only fair to put Meath now inside the top 18. They'll be getting ready to go up to Division 2A of the National Hurling League for next year. Down sitting in 17, know that they have to beat Kildare, who are the big fallers on the second page of the power rankings. Kildare are ahead on scoring difference into the last round of the Joe McDonagh this weekend. Neither team wants to be scrapping for their lives in the second flight, but for Kildare particularly, lads, this is the big disappointment. They were ahead 12 minutes into the Division 2A final. We were talking about Kildare potentially going to Division 1 of the National Hurling League, and they've just had a summer to forget so far. They've lost all of their games in the Joe McDonagh, very low scoring totals in some of those matches, including just the 16 points against Leash in the weekend just gone by. But I think Leash's focus was on that game against Down and ensuring that they stay in the Joe McDonagh. So it could be a case if they came remarkably close to going up into a significant step in their development by qualifying for Division 1, missed out on that against Offaly. And since then, there's been a run of games pretty much week after week, and Kildare have hit a bit of a rut. So huge game coming up for them this Saturday evening against Down. Kerry are in 15. Kerry are in a sticky wicket to try and qualify for the Joe McDonagh final, because Carlow, who've jumped ahead of them with their good form in the Joe McDonagh, including their draws against Kerry and against Laois, are in pole position to join Offaly in the Joe McDonagh Cup final. Offaly have no real need for a result because they're already qualified for the Joe McDonagh Cup final ahead of the final round of games this weekend. So if Carlow win, they'll be assured of a place in the final, which would be a disappointment both for Kerry, who've been the unlucky losers many times in recent years in the second grade against Antrim and against Westmeath. But it's Carlow who are favourites to qualify this weekend. Offaly up to 12th place on the back of winning Division 2A of the league, unbeaten across league and championship so far this season, under-20s into a Leinster final, which is an effective All-Ireland semi-final next Wednesday evening against Wexford as well. So things definitely on an upward trajectory for Offaly, who are just outside the Lee McCarthy counties right now. Westmeath have endured a really difficult start to the campaign. Their captain Killian Doyle picking up a quad injury just before the campaign started was far from helpful. They've been conceding big totals. Particularly, they took a scutching and conceded six goals against Galway in the weekend just gone by. After the break, they've got Antrim and they've got Wexford. They'll be hoping that they can pick up some kind of result there, because with Antrim already on 1 point, it feels like that last round of games coming up on the first weekend of June is going to determine whether Westmeath are going back to the Joe McDonagh after a couple of years, or whether they can stay in the Leinster Championship again. But morale on the floor at the moment, and quite a few injuries that they've picked up, it's a big task to see them actually stay in Leinster from here.
Where are you with Antrim as well? Because like, they've been so competitive, obviously probably should have beaten Dublin, and they're kind of, I don't know, I guess they're edging very close to being like almost proper competitive maybe, Will, or is that kind of maybe a bit too much to say?
Well, I think last week was the first week, Johnny, where a game really ran away from them. The game in Corrigan Park against Kilkenny. And obviously that's going to catch quite a lot of attention. Now, Antrim themselves, like, they put over, 23 scores, including three goals during the game. Like, if you score 320 against Kilkenny, you'd probably expect to win some of those games. But Kilkenny were in huge scoring form in the weekend just gone by. And both Galway and Kilkenny winning very non-competitive games, which perhaps maybe stresses the difference between the top four in Leinster and the two others who were within the group. But that's no new news, really. Up until then, you kind of had to credit Antrim for, even in the games that they lost during the National League, such as Dublin away, Waterford, where they gave Waterford a decent enough rattle, and, you know, beat Laois to ensure that they were staying up. Antrim are having a good year up until that point. And as you say, they probably should have beaten Dublin. They were in a winning position in that game up until 67 minutes gone. Dublin get themselves in front, and Antrim still get back and get themselves a draw. They lost then the game against Wexford. They obviously have a difficult enough finish coming up because they've got Galway, who are going to be ruthless because of the scoring difference situation following their draw against Kilkenny. I think Antrim are making progress, and the fact that they've come up from the Joe McDonagh, they should at this point stay in the Leinster Championship for next year. I would fancy Antrim to beat Westmeath in the last round of games, even if they require a result at that point. Even a draw should do them with the way that the results have been going so far. So I think for Antrim to be staying in Division 1 of the Hurling League for next season, and to be staying in the Leinster Championship, would represent progress for Darren Gleeson's side. I'm not sure if they're how close they are to maybe getting past Dublin and Wexford, who are their immediate targets beyond that, but the gap isn't that big between Antrim and those two. I think they definitely feel like they're a lot closer than Westmeath are right now.
A puppy blow to their misery, they'll have seen on screen, 12-7. So as you mentioned, Will, Offaly up to 12th. That was after their big win over Kerry, as you said, in Tullamore the last day out. Westmeath at 11 remain the same. Antrim at 10, we've just spoken about, remain at the same, as do Wexford at 9. Dublin are 8 and Waterford are at 7. And here's where it gets very interesting. Here's the top six. So it's six.
This is contention, Shane.
This is contentious.
What?
Sorry, Johnny Ward here beside me. Galway down 2 to 6th. Tipperary remain the same at 5th. We have Cork down a place to 4th. Clare make a massive jump from 6th to 3rd, Will. And Kilkenny are in 2nd. Limerick are in 1st. No changes there.
This is a joke. I mean, I can see why Scale wasn't talking to him. Galway 6th. What would you... I mean, this is an absolute nonsense.
Tell him what you really think, Johnny. Yeah,
and he's a Leinster man. Come on, son.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, right? So Galway, be concerned not. I think it's actually very close between 2 and 6. And there was a temptation here with Clare doing the jump. And really, that's where there's been a bit of a trickle-down effect with Cork and Galway going down. So it's not been really down to Cork and Galway's performances themselves, but more acknowledging the fact that Clare have landed a glancing blow on the King. It's not a knockout blow just yet with the victory that they had against Limerick. And Clare have still got a few difficult games to ensure that they qualify for the Munster final or to get into the All-Ireland series. But that explains the jump. Now, I wouldn't take any issue with what Galway have done so far. I think they felt their way throughout the league and then come into the Championship and have done what was expected of them so far. They'll be a little bit disappointed that they allowed the second half to run away a little bit from them against Kilkenny, but I still get the feeling that that game had a certain element of shadow boxing. Absolutely. At Nolan Park, where it was almost like, this time around we're going to have a much more cordial handshake than what happened last season. We'll walk off the pitch, see you in the Leinster final in a few weeks' time, and then maybe we'll have a cut at it before the semi-finals. So I think Galway are still a major contender for the All-Ireland series when it comes to the semi-finals. I think they're a team who are still very well matched to play against Limerick, who are maybe down a few percentages on where they were last year, and Galway could still have a big say in what happens with both the Leinster Championship and the Liam McCarthy. I think sixth place probably reflects more what we've seen from the Munster teams so far, so that's why Tipperary up to fifth place.
You've Kilkenny second, like, you've Kilkenny second and Galway who are better than Kilkenny in sixth. I mean, what is going on?
Now, I think lots of people are going to take contention with this idea of Galway being better than Kilkenny. Like, you have to respect a couple of things about Kilkenny, Johnny, which is that they were in the All-Ireland final within a puck of a ball of Limerick last year, and they also got to a league final where they were far away from a puck of a ball against Limerick. Since then, Kilkenny have done nothing wrong, really. They picked up that draw against Galway, battling down from 5 points down in the game to get that draw. And on top of that, they've been, you know, unbeaten in the rest of the Leinster Championship so far. So I think it would have been unfair to drop them, but I was incredibly tempted to put Clare briefly ahead of them. But I think Clare in third right now is a fair reflection, especially where we're, again, going to get more of an idea of where Clare are at when they play against Waterford this coming weekend. Clare, don't forget, lost their first game against Tipperary, conceded some sloppy goals, and we were wondering at that point whether it was going to be difficult for Clare to qualify, but they gave us the perfect response when they beat Limerick. And now, if they are to put Waterford to the sword, you would expect them at that point to be in a qualification position for at
that
least
game
the top
so
three.
Much going for it. Like, yeah. It's so much going for it, because, I mean, if the game took place, like, 2 weeks ago, the betting would probably have been close between them. Now it's like Clare are just expected to win comfortably when that may not be the case.
My only contention... Yeah, sorry,
the thing as well is, lads, that, you know, Waterford have been technically played back into it now by the fact that we had the draw between Cork and Tipperary, smashing game last Saturday at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. But even when you thought that Waterford were going to be entirely out of it after their first two defeats, now, if they can win their last two and get themselves to 4 points, maybe they can pull off what would be considered a Cork from last year, where Cork had a miserable start in the Munster Championship and still got into the All-Ireland Series. I still think it's a big ask, because I think Waterford were incredibly disappointing on the back of playing very, very well against Limerick in the first game for the best part. But then you kind of reanalyse it and you say, well, hold on, Waterford played a big chunk of that game with a man extra. And with all of the intensity of effort that they put in, maybe they left that behind them against Limerick on the first day. You still have to go to Semple Stadium for their effective home games for the rest of this championship. I think that's still been a big disadvantage for Waterford in it. But Waterford just have to kind of show a response now in their last two matches if they're to have a chance to qualify. Well, if Clare win, they'll be in a very, very strong position. But it's great to have Munster feel as wide open as it is, because I think for most of us who were filling it out at the start, lads, kind of went Limerick plus two others. And then based on the form that we saw earlier in the year, you're thinking it's going to be maybe Tip plus Clare or Cork. But right now, it's incredibly difficult to call who's actually going to be even the top three. I'm not saying that Limerick won't qualify, but and the fact that Limerick have got their rivals Tipperary to come in the next game just sets it up beautifully for 2 weekends' time. And like, it's fantastic to see there's been crowds in excess of 30,000 at games in the Munster Championship. And I saw John Fogarty from the Examiner had up earlier this week that at this stage there's only terrace tickets left for the game between Tip and Limerick. And I believe that the games coming up on the 28th are already down to terrace tickets as well. So there's going to be bumper attendances over the next 3 or 4 games in the Munster Championship. Like, it's remarkable to think that in the second week of May, stand tickets are already sold out for matches on the last week of the month. So it just goes to show the hunger that's there to go and watch these Munster Championship matches.
Because it matters. Yeah. Like, in Limerick, who are the shortest prize favourites for to win All Ireland before the start that I can ever remember could be out like quite soon, which is completely mad.
It's insane. The jeopardy begins. Will, I know it's a lot of pressure. Fair play. You'll be on the Christmas card lists in Clare. You'll be getting social media mentions from Galway, though.
You can see a crude A4 like printout of the screen grab and the Galway dress.
Oh yeah,
like,
100%.
For several games, just for Will's five face. Games actually.
Yeah. Okay. Will, fair play.
This happened last year, lads, as well. People felt that Galway were too far down the rankings during it, and I said at the time, I qualified that by saying, I think Galway are going to be All-Ireland semi-finalists, which is exactly what happened. I think Galway will again be in the All-Ireland semi-finals. I think they're going to get to the Leinster final and they'll navigate their way into the last four. Whether they can potentially beat a team who come out as Munster champions on the other side, that's the big question for Galway. But deeper panel, they're averaging 12, 13 scores a game. It's not a reliance on two or three players as maybe would have been the case in previous years. So I'm actually quite hopeful about Galway later in the year. And again, I hope before anyone clips me or says, hey, this guy hates Galway, this is about respecting what Tip Cork Clare have done so far.
Yep, fair enough. Will, great stuff as always. Thanks a million.
All right, take it easy, lads.
And that was your Power Rankings.
I absolutely adore them, lads. I have unbelievable time for them, but they're a great bunch, but it's not acceptable.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
8:46 a.m. on this Thursday morning's OTBM. Delighted to welcome back John Duggan. John, how are things?
Good, Shane and John, yourselves?
Absolutely flying it, flying it. What's happening in the world of sport this morning?
Well, you have Inter Milan, 1 foot in the Champions League final in Istanbul. But the standard of the game was far inferior to what we saw on Tuesday between Real Madrid and Manchester City. So if Real or City get through and don't win the Champions League, they'll be very disappointed. But I think Inter are probably through. I think AC Milan were poor defensively yesterday. And Inter now have the crowd for the second game. AC Milan had the fans as Inter were the designated away team. But now we have Inter's the home team next Tuesday. And Premier League old boys, the cabaret act of Edin Dzeko and Henrik Mkhitaryan scoring. So just kind of shows where Italian football is at. They've done well to get to the semi-finals, but I do think the final is at the Etihad next Wednesday.
Where are you on the other game then? Because
I think City will get through.
I do as well.
They haven't lost at home in the Champions League since 2018.
Wow.
They beat Bayern 3-0 there. They beat Leipzig 7-0. And
like their away form is patchy in the Champions League at best this year for whatever reason.
Well, I felt the first time in a long time I've seen City dominated in a game as they were for the first 20 minutes of the second half against Real Madrid, but they didn't concede. And once they equalised, they were able to close out the game. It was hot and it was a brilliant match. Like it was football
it was
at its best.
Yeah, it was a great game.
It was quality, you know. So like Real are the establishment. They know how to win these things. But I just do feel that it is in City's hands now with a fit squad. Like Phil Foden even can't get a look in, you know?
Mad. Like.
That is mad. But it just shows, you know, how well oiled they are in terms of fitness and slickness. And De Bruyne is crucial. I think he's been their key player. I know Haaland's got all the goals, but I think De Bruyne has been key. He was the match winner in the Arsenal game. And he got the goal last night or the other night on Tuesday, and I think he could be the man now to lead City to the Champions League final. I just feel City have a maturity that they haven't had.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a while. It took Man United a while in the 90s to get there, and Pep didn't make any zany. I mean, once I saw the team, and oh, well, this is a mature team, an experienced team, Gundogan, De Bruyne in there, Rodri, and I feel that there's a maturity and more calmness about City than in recent years. And to be fair to Grealish, he's really stepped up.
I thought Hallam was disappointing. I was vilified in a WhatsApp group where I said, I think Evan Ferguson is a better player outside the box than Haaland. I think he's better outside the box. He's better at linking play.
Johnny,
he's
like,
better.
Johnny,
Haaland outside the box, he gives the ball away too much.
Johnny, this is like Venus and Mars stuff. Like Evan Ferguson's 18 years of age.
Outside the box.
Ask me in 5 years.
Hold
time.
Up, okay. Hold up, play.
What do you mean?
Hold
what
play,
do you mean by outside the box?
Hold up, play, linking up, play. Haaland, in general, he gives the ball away too much. His link up play is not good enough.
Haaland
everything else
51
is amazing.
51 goals. This
I'm
season.
Talking about what's he done outside the box.
He doesn't need to.
But he's not actually amazingly good at linking up play. He gives the ball away quite a bit when he's like when somebody's tightening him. Haaland looks for a layoff. He gives the ball like I thought he was disappointing the other night. I'd probably rip it up in the second leg. Outside
he was
the
well
box,
marshalled by Madrid.
He was outside the box. He's not actually amazing. He's not that good outside the box. He's amazing at everything else.
Evan Ferguson is nowhere near going up against Real Madrid and Antonio Rudiger in a Champions League setting.
Holding up the ball.
No, but like playing in the game.
Do you mean
he's
just,
playing for Brighton?
Just that specific one skill, holding up the ball. You
holding
mean?
Up the ball and linking up play. Your touch when you're basically your back to goal.
I just think we're putting too much pressure on Evan Ferguson.
I'm not saying he's better than Haaland as a player. I think outside the box, he's actually becoming a more complete player. Haaland gives the ball away too much outside the box for me.
I just think we need to come back to Evan Ferguson in 5 years' time.
Mm.
Because I just think there's too much talk. There's too much pressure.
Sorry, you look at him at the weekend and you're like, this is ridiculous. Like, yeah. He was on for what, half an hour?
But I just think we just need to let it happen with Evan Ferguson. Because I just feel we're building this guy up to be Lionel Messi.
Well,
the Lionel Messi of Irish football. And it hasn't happened yet. It's happening, but it hasn't happened
yet. It's not even Evan Ferguson. Haaland outside the box in games like this, at times to me, is disappointing. He's not able to link up play as well as he maybe should be, or everything else, he's amazing. I've never seen anything like him. But I thought he was disappointing.
I will say, right, we get given out to quite often for hyping up Evan Ferguson. We had the roadshow last week, the Just Eat Roadshow with John O'Shea, Wes Brown, Graham Souness, and I was down at it. And Joe or Nathan asked John O'Shea, who's on the current Irish coaching setup, of course, under Stephen Kenny, his thoughts on Evan Ferguson. I was thinking, oh, he's going to obviously play it down and manage expectations. John O'Shea just goes, he's going to challenge Robbie Keane's goal scoring record.
I hope so.
The whole room
is
gasped.
I think he's a different type of player. Like you're talking about Haaland. Haaland's a predator. He's a goal scorer. He finishes, right? Evan Ferguson's more, he's more of a 10 and a 9. A Harry Kane type, I would say.
Ferguson.
But he's 18 years of age.
Yeah.
I just think people need to chill about Evan Ferguson.
What did you make of Haaland the other night?
Marshalled. Like he marshalled, was in the Spurs game at White Hart Lane or the new White Hart Lane earlier this season. And it's not his type of game.
Mm.
I think he'll get more space in the game at the Etihad. I think City were in a containment situation.
Yeah.
And I thought Real Madrid, like they had 26% possession in the first half. They played defensively.
Yeah.
I just think
they're so well coached.
I hope more than anybody else, and just as much as you guys, Evan Ferguson becomes an absolute superstar. But I just think we all just need to chill about it and let him be himself and do his thing.
Johnny, you're getting a few mentions in the comments. For the Evan.
I've no issue saying this because I think Haaland outside the box is actually quite frustrating at times. He gives the ball away too much.
Michael makes the point on YouTube. It doesn't matter as he is a goal scorer, Haaland. Mm. It is what he does in the box that is integral to that position.
But also, Haaland's movement is incredible.
It's a different game when they're playing conservative against him. It's hard for him because his pace is off the charts.
I just think Haaland is a pure 9.
Mm.
He's not a 10 and a 9. He's not 9.5. Pure 9. And that's been what Guardiola's been missing, and that's why they bought him, because he didn't have one.
I don't think though in the second leg, I think Real will play very similarly in that sense. They're not going to give him any space. You can't. He's just too quick and he's too good.
One thing I'm going to just defend you slightly here, Johnny. Do you not think, John, that Ferguson could handle a Champions League performance
Absolutely.
Against Rudiger?
Absolutely he could.
I just think it's a different environment. I think in the France game now, maybe was he fully fit? I just think in the France game he was on his own up there in front.
Mm.
But
Ferguson's playing for Brighton. Throw Ferguson into that Man City team. He would do alright, like. Do you know what I mean?
I just think it's too soon. I just think it's too soon to be making these kind of comparisons.
Well, if you had De Bruyne providing for him, you're going to score more goals.
I think Ferguson's link-up play outside the box is
underrated. A year ago,
underrated.
Nobody was talking
really
about
do.
Ferguson in this regard.
Watch his link-up play when there are players tied to him outside the box. Watch his general.
But he's a very intelligent footballer.
Yeah, very intelligent,
his
and he's really good at linking play. I think that's the one flaw I'd have in Haaland's game is generally how many goals does he get outside the box in general, and how does he link-up play outside the box?
Which was the same as Van Nistelrooy.
Well, he more runs into. Yeah. Positions to finish things.
And what he does, he's the best player I've ever seen. But I think in general, linking up play outside the box, he's actually not. He's not amazing.
I don't think that is his job. I don't think that's what his strengths are, his attributes are.
I just feel that we're getting carried away, I think, with the Evan Ferguson thing, making him this absolute superstar. And I know it was at a lesser level, but we were doing this about Troy Parrott 2 to 3 years ago.
I think not really.
Yeah. No, there's so much hype about Troy Parrott.
No, it's not comparable, because if you ask people in the game, Evan Ferguson, they're like, yeah, he could be. I don't want to hype him at all. I just think sometimes you look at Haaland's performances in games like that where defenders are really good and tight against him. I think his link-up play is a bit disappointing at times. I'll say that all day, every day. Everything else, he's amazing.
Well, keep the comments coming in. Let us know what you think of that Evan Ferguson comparison. And comparison to Haaland outside the box.
I just wish we'd get away from Evan Ferguson hot takes and let Evan Ferguson do his thing.
We're on Sunday, Saturday rather. JD and I.
I think Ferguson can handle it. That's all I'll say. I think he can, because he's not sitting here watching OTBM this morning, Evan. Do you know?
I hope not.
So he's not reading the newspaper. So the hype we probably see, we way more of the hype than Evan's going to see. He's got a good family around him. I don't think the hype is actually going to affect him too much.
Like, it's a big second leg for Haaland, I think, because they really should get the job done. They're a better team than Real. Yeah. They've no excuses. You've said it all year, JD. This is their year. But part of me hopes that the game's in the melting pot with 10 minutes to go, because I still think mentally, I'm just not sure if they have a little bit of a Champions League hoodoo, because they should have won it by now and they haven't.
Well, they're a team that plays an autopilot. Mm. So when you go off autopilot, they panic. Mm. And as I said, for the first 20 minutes of that second half, they were under pressure. They were like, they could have conceded again, and they could have been 3-0 by the end of it. Mm. But they got a wonder goal from De Bruyne. I just feel that everybody's delivering. Grealish, Mahrez, like Mahrez was in the game in the cup semi-final, scored a hat-trick. Mm. Came in and scored a hat-trick. I think Rodri's playing well. I think like Stones had a really good season. I just think the whole team, Ederson played well the other night. I think the whole of the City team. I think Guardiola is just a big hammer, and I think Haaland has actually helped that, because he's been a focal point and he can't be messing around. And like, how mad is it to think about that Guardiola in a Champions League final a couple of years ago didn't play a defensive midfielder?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so I just think the madness of like the Lyon games, the Spurs games is gone, and they should be able to finish it. But if they don't, it's a failure.
John, since we last had you on, Donal O'Cusack was on the Sunday game, giving his views on GA Go and on RTE and on the game of hurling's lack of visibility as a result. And we've, of course, had conversations on the show so far this week. Declan McBennett was on with Katrina Perry, giving his 2 cents worth. What's your take on all this?
Well, I think, lads, what do we want the GA to be, and where is the line? So the GA is a voluntary organisation. It's an amateur sport. The players don't get paid. It's community-based. We're relying on volunteers to coach kids, to wash jerseys, to give up their time in their week, which is everybody's got a busy week. And where is the line on that in terms of making revenue to drive money back into the association, to build the clubhouses that are the envy of soccer in this country? To build the infrastructure where we have coaches for young boys, young girls. So it's where the line is, I think, is the question. And I think that mistakes have been made. I think the biggest thing that people need to realise is that the championship is the show. The championship is the big kahuna. It's what everybody... I think the most important thing in any sport is trying to get the hearts and minds. It's not just the purists. It's not just the people that are invested every week. It's the whole of the country. So that's what the Republic of Ireland team was always brilliant at. It has always been the number one thing for me. But the GA with the championship has always been able to get the hearts and minds of the public, where you'd have a million people watch the All-Irelands, where you'd have the gate receipts like you're seeing in the Munster Championship. And that's what it is for me. And if you're hiding the show behind a paywall, where the Munster Hurling Championship is the only thing at the moment that has real jeopardy on it, as Will was talking about there, you've got 99 football games this season of the championship, including the Tailteann Cup. I was going through last year, 34 games in the Hurling Championship. And all this has happened between April and July. Or you don't have the space to show all those games. So if you don't have Virgin involved, and if you don't have maybe the RT News Channel showing games or whatever service, then you're going to have a situation where you have the GA Go. I think the GA Go is almost ahead of its time. It's the kind of thing, with streaming becoming more and more prevalent in 10 to 20 years' time, you're going to have more people casting and streaming these things. But it does rub a little bit against the ethos of what the GAA is supposed to be about as an amateur voluntary body. And where is the line on that? I think the line is very good when you're talking about the diaspora for GAA Go, which has been in existence since 2014. Mm. And when you're talking about games like New York against Leitrim, which we all wanted to see late at night, it was a great option. Or games on the shoulder, I would say. But the main sport at the moment with Jeopardy on it and with games that really need people's attention is the Munster Hurling Championship. The provincial championship football is defunct. You got these round robin situations in the All-Ireland series. We've got 16 teams into 12. So it's not really at a Jeopardy point of view for the football championship, apart from a few teams being relegated to the Tailteann Cup until the All-Ireland quarter-final stage. Whereas in Munster now, you've got five competitive counties reduced to three, and that's what people want to be watching. I think that's what's kind of got people's backs up, the selection of the games, and then the argument, whether it's true or not, that there was a cynical move to put these behind a paywall to get subscribers into GAA Go. I think GAA Go should be a supplementary thing. It shouldn't be almost competing. At least with Sky, it was a rival broadcaster, and a lot of people would have Sky and they could flick around and get Sky. With this, you actually have to make a decision to go and get it. I think the season pass is very good value, but if you're looking to get an individual game as €12, that is quite expensive, and then you've got to go through the whole rigmarole of putting it up.
It's not, JD, the €12 to watch a champion. Like, I was late for Football Saturday here one day because I paid €10 to watch my sister playing a game in the Connacht Championship at intermediate level or junior level, and I was delighted to be able to watch it for £10 because somebody streamed it. Like, people are so averse to paying for anything now. They won't buy a newspaper, they won't subscribe to newspaper online, they want everything for free. €12 to watch a championship game, sorry, like, what is wrong with that? Like, it's a one-off.
Relatively speaking, though, to the season pass, it's quite expensive. As in, as John said,
€2 game for the season pass.
Yeah. League of Ireland is like, what, €7 per game, and that's obviously a much lesser level. It's €12, you know, if you're not at the game, it's not asking that much. Do you want everything to be on TV, like? I don't get the argument in GAA at all. And if, as you say, the money is going back into it, if it's going back into investing in facilities, and it is, that's good for everyone. Like,
I just think the whole structure of fixtures and competitions is wrong in the GAA.
Mm,
I think
it is.
I think there should be a chat. What, like, I think they could get rid of all the preseason competitions, get rid of the provincial competitions in football, and run a league championship between March and July. Space it out. Have all the time where there's more space to put all the matches that people want to see on free to air, and then have your shoulder games for a subscription if you want it. But the subscription can't be in a kind of a competing situation with free to air. And RT, to be fair to them, did point out they can only show 31 games, and 16 of those are mandated to be shown, like provincial finals.
But I'd like to see the decision making behind the other 15.
But provincial finals are,
I'd like to see how they choose.
Yeah, are out of sync. But the Munster Hurling Championship is the jewel in the crown. Until you get to the All-Ireland Series in hurling, you've had Clare Limerick, Clare Tipperary, Clare Waterford this weekend, and Cork Tipperary all behind a paywall. That is out of balance. And that's why you have the politicians, the Taoiseach being asked about it, and that's why you have the anger out there. And I just think that needs to be reviewed for next season going forward. But this is here to stay. Unless they list these matches as designated events to the government, GAA Go is going to be here to stay, and people are going to have to get used to it. But there has to be also a degree of, I think that RTÉ and the GAA got caught by surprise by this week, right? Because I think the technology is possibly not there as much as they would like. I think the messaging has not been there, and there's a bit of, well, this is the way it's going to be going forward. And that, once again, rubs against what the GAA is meant to be about, an amateur volunteer organisation. Yeah. And also, just to finish, the record revenue is $96 million last year. How much of this, how much squeeze do you need to put on GAA media rights out of this revenue? We need to probably have more people in the tent than we do now for like these certain like games, like Munster Hurling games. And a lot of it's back down to the split season and the fact that the whole thing has been squeezed into traffic jam, and the show is being affected, the show being the championship.
100%. It's a conversation. It's not going to go away. You mentioned all the hurling matches that have been behind the paywall. There's going to be some massive games in Gaelic football over the next few weeks behind the paywall as well, and then that crowd are going to get fairly riled up.
Crowd.
So, well, the Gaelic football crowd as opposed to the hurling crowd. It's just going to continue rumbling on this, you'd imagine, for the rest of the summer.
Why do you expect everything for free, though?
Not necessarily for free. €12 is a lot for I think, for a match.
€12?
When you compare it to the, when you compare it to the season pass, it works out at €2 per game. Do you know, could they charge, I don't know, fiver for a match?
Buy a season pass. Like, I mean, why are people so averse to paying?
Charging a fiver would encourage more people to potentially buy the match. You know, I don't know what the numbers are.
Championship game? It's €12. Like, it's, what, 2 points now?
I know, but it's also €12 into the match, in person. Mm. So you can't really be, you know, you're getting charged the same price.
Then try to go to the game if you can't.
I know.
Pay for it or get somebody to stream it for you.
I don't think that the charge for watching on a stream should be anywhere close to the charge for going into the Munster.
But even Johnny, but I think your people's mentality is switching now from, well, I'm going to see the Munster Hurling Championship on TV to now, well, I've got to go and look to pay for the Munster Championship, which is now a part of the shareholder, is that is RT, which I've already paid a license fee for, and I've got to get all this set up and get all this streaming set up and everything. It just seems to me a little bit of a friction against what the GAA is meant to be.
Yeah,
and that is the biggest argument is this, and I'd love to know what people's views are. Are you cool with this whole GAA Go thing, or we just have to get with it? Are we all complaining too much? Well, I'm interested what the audience thinks, because this is here to stay now, but what is the GAA supposed to be? And I think that's the bigger question around this whole thing.
100%. Keep your comments in, as John says. John, great stuff as always this morning. Thanks a million. John Duggan there, joining us as per usual on the show at 9:04 a.m. on this morning's show. Time to turn our attention to something else. Crohn's and Colitis Ireland has just launched a new symptom checker as part of its Poo Taboo campaign, marking World Inflammatory Bowel Disease Day. That's on Friday, May the 19th. Check out crohnscolitis.ie/symptom checker or call the Crohn's and Colitis Ireland support line. That's on 01531 2983 on Monday, Wednesday or Fridays from 9:30 in the morning until 12:30 in the afternoon for further information. Delighted to be joined on the line now by the Irish Rugby International, John Ryan, who is also an ambassador for Crohn's and Colitis Ireland. John, very good morning to you. How are things?
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Dion, thanks guys.
Thanks for joining us. I suppose you might first of all give us some context as to why you're an ambassador for Crohn's and Colitis Ireland. So you were diagnosed with, and some people mightn't be aware of this, you were diagnosed with ulcerative colitis back in August of 2011. Maybe tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, I kind of just got my first professional contract, and I had done my 6 months before training with Munster and all that. And when I got the contract that pre-season, I actually got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. So it was a bit of a, it just started with symptoms, and I was lucky enough, I was one of the few people who get it that actually checked the symptoms out, because I was very freaked out about it, really, because like, obviously I thought my career was over with this. What's going on? This is, seems serious. I'm ill all the time, I can't keep weight on, I'm passing blood and all that kind of stuff. So I got it checked out and I got it diagnosed early, and therefore got the proper medication for it. So I was pretty lucky, but it's just not the case. In apparently like 40% of people with symptoms don't get their symptoms checked, and it can sometimes get quite severe. So that's why I suppose I'm an ambassador, because it's good to spread the word, and there's no stigma should be attached to having this disease. It's although it can be harsh, it's perfectly, you can live a perfectly normal life. So that's why I got behind it, to kind of lift that stigma.
Just on that, John, sorry, I hate the phrase the devil's in the detail, but in this instance, I wasn't aware of this disease at all. The devil actually is in the symptoms, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And when you're having symptoms, it could be nothing. You can, like for me, it was passing blood, but it could be anything really that could cause that. But just from the off chance that it might be IBD, you know, Crohn's or colitis, then you should just really get it checked out. And that's why I think it's a good idea. Do you know, Crohn's Colitis Ireland have set up this symptom checker, because other people might not be so fast to get their symptoms checked due to embarrassment. And as I said, it's perfectly normal, and there's a lot of people in Ireland living with it.
Yeah, the year you were diagnosed, John, as well, you had also got your first professional rugby contract. You were balancing a final year in university as well. So, I mean, that must have been insane. Quite a busy period for you.
Yeah, and do you know what, that's the, what they say is it's the workload and maybe stress that brings it on. But yeah, I had a big year. I did final year of college, and I was in on kind of a training contract at Munster, and I was lucky enough to procure a professional contract. So it was a busy year. It didn't help that this was added to the list of strain on the body, but I was lucky, as I said, I got it diagnosed, I got it under control, and I was able to progress with my development in rugby.
Was it difficult for you in terms of, I remember hearing you speak before, certainly reading comments from you, that when you were first diagnosed, it can be awkward, even something as simple as a friend asking you out for coffee and socialising generally. You probably didn't know what way to turn, even for little things like that, that meeting a friend for coffee became a little bit more difficult for you.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know, you kind of want to get out and chew the fat with your friends and stuff, and it came to a point where I knew where all the bathrooms were in certain establishments. So I'd say, oh, we'll go here or whatever. So it was kind of like that. It was tough, but once you tell your friends, it's you're better off. I always found is telling your friends, and I started going out with my now wife in 2011 as well. So she didn't add any stress, no, to be fair, but she was very, very good and a big support.
In a practical sense, sir, what do you mean by that? Like, you're actually looking at the toilet facilities in the place you're going to eat. Why so? Why can it be such an imposition on you?
Yeah, it's almost a psychological thing for me, but just in case I had a flare-up or something happened like that, then I may need to rush to go to the bathroom. But they were smaller things. So, you know, I was okay going after a while when I got used to the actual disease, and when I understood it, I was okay with those kind of things. But Munster back then was in Limerick and Cork, two separate facilities, so that was awkward because I had to drive to Limerick. So in that case, I did know where every petrol station had a bathroom. So yeah, that was a tough logistical one. But look, it is what it is, and I got on with it, and I was never embarrassed by it, really. Well, I was maybe embarrassed because I didn't know about it, but then I got, you know, once you brush up in your knowledge on it, you know, it's fairly severe, and I feel pretty proud that I managed to kind of carve a good path in rugby and have a good career and a very normal life for the last 12 years.
This is said a lot, but it kind of is a male macho thing as well, that it's not like the inclination is to kind of bury things like this.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, you're dead right. I think you hit the nail on the head, because you can say it's a macho male thing, but then it's you don't want to show any weakness. But it's kind of as bad as well if you're female and you have it. It's tough because you can't have this. This is a horrible thing to have. You can't talk about this. But look, I've met plenty of girls that've had it, and they're, you know, they wear it proudly, and it's nothing you should be ashamed of. I wouldn't say, like, you say it proudly, but like, it's just you're not ashamed of it, and it's something you have. It's someone else's another ailment, and you can carry on normally. Hopefully, you can carry on normally if you've caught it in time.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant thing that you're talking about it as well, John, because reading the survey in the research as well, most people are aware of the disease and maybe of the symptoms, but 4 in 10 said they would do nothing initially if they saw blood in the toilet bowl, opting for a wait-and-see approach. So I think hearing from people like yourself who are ambassadors is certainly going to raise awareness, and people are going to maybe have an idea of what to do. A lot of people will be familiar with your rugby career, of course. John, over 200 games for Munster, 24 Irish caps as well, the 2018 Grand Slam, just to name a few. You must be looking around. You're in New Zealand at the moment, so there can't be many players, I think, who have played Premiership rugby. You were with the Wasps earlier in the season, URC and Super Rugby in one season. That's quite an achievement.
If there's someone else, show me, because I don't think there is.
That's, the only one, I think,
that's crazy, yeah. It's been an absolute mental season, yeah. Obviously, I wasn't wanting to leave Munster, and then I got over that. I went to Wasps. I kind of fully invested in Wasps, and then that fell to pieces. 167 people losing their job overnight. That was tough. And then, you know, going back to Munster, that was great, because it was just the ability to get those 200 caps that I craved, and, you know, other great moments. You know, I got my 50th European cap in a Munster jersey, which was special. And now I'm down here in Chiefs, and luckily the Chiefs are absolutely humming along, winning every game. So I'm delighted, and another one tomorrow, I hope.
Just on the Wasps thing, I was staggered, John, to read at the weekend that Premiership clubs in general, on average, are losing $4 million a year, and you're looking at the London Irish situation. How precarious is the situation in England at the moment from your perspective?
Well, it's not a very stable stable union at the moment. For whatever reason, I don't know. It's just, obviously, everyone spoke about Worcester, and Worcester was being spoken about long before Wasps, and Wasps fell 2 weeks after Worcester did, so the warning wasn't really there from our point of view. But I couldn't tell you what's going on, because you hear London Irish, as you said, Exeter hemorrhaging players, Newcastle and Sale were talking about joining forces there last week. I don't think that will ever happen, but just the fact that these conversations are happening, it's crazy, and I don't know what's what's causing it, but something has to change, and it has to be changed from the top down. You can't, it can't happen again what's happened to Worcester and Wasps, because it's people's livelihoods that are at stake, really.
Yeah, crazy stuff, to be honest. You've been kept remarkably busy, John, because if the Chiefs go all the way to the Super Rugby final, which I think is on June 24th, you'll have made it 35 games in 10 months, and then you'll be back for, I assume, pre-season with Munster then again. So it's all go.
Yeah, 35 games in a season would be ideal, as long as there's a medal around my neck at the end of it. What a season would have been. But yeah, back straight away. Like, I think Munster start pre-season in the first week of July, so that's kind of, I'm going to have a conversation there with the lads, see, can they squeeze out a few weeks out of that?
100%, and it's like, you're a Cork man, so like, getting home and back with the family back to Cork, like, the wife and three kids as well, so I assume there's an itch to get back, but also, yeah, I'm sure you're enjoying your time in New Zealand at the same time.
Yeah, we're loving it down here. We're making the best of it anyway. I came down in the middle of February, and my wife, my youngest was only 3 weeks old when I left, so I left my poor wife and three kids at home alone, which was tough, but she came over a month later, and we've just been making the best of it, seeing as much of the island as possible. But of course, New Zealand's going into winter, so we're getting a lot of rain here at the moment. I've been assured that the weather's going to be good for our game tomorrow. We're down in Taranaki at the moment, so hopefully it'll be good tomorrow. But yeah, looking forward to getting back. We're living in Limerick, actually, but definitely a few trips down to Cork would be nice, down to my family, because I haven't seen them a whole pile the last 12 months. I haven't been down there. They've been up to me and they've come over to me, but I haven't been in Cork much, but definitely looking forward to that.
Another Cork man is a regular with us on OTB AM here at Ronan O'Gara, comes on usually once a week on a Friday morning, and you're in the quite distinct position as well. You've been coached by both Rog and Scott Robertson with your time at the Barbarians. Like, what was that like? What type of a coach is Ronan especially?
Well, in fairness, as coaches, they're excellent, and you can tell they're brilliant. It's not the environment to find out how good a coach you are, I don't think. They certainly led from the front on the social activities, but they were brilliant. They were excellent. Like, we had our fun all week, and we rocked up on the Sunday, so we met on Tuesday. I think in total for the week, we might have done maybe an hour and a half of work. The rest was kind of commercial stuff and a few drinks, a few dinners out, but it was when they were on, they were on, and the lads would have gone through a wall from that day. And the way they spoke as well was excellent. And they're obviously men, you know, who you'd highly respect in rugby circles. So, no, I loved it because I played with Rog, got coached by him, so it was great. And he's just a good fella, and you can see he's having great success overseas as well. So that's brilliant.
I don't know how much you've managed to see of La Rochelle or Leinster this season, given the time difference, etc. But how do you think the Champions Cup final is going to go?
Oh, sorry, I feel bad for Rog. I know he's on your show and all that, but like, Leinster are a bit of a machine this year. They are, like, they're just, you can't bet against them in either like the league or Champions Cup. They're looking very strong this year. So I'm just hoping, from a league point of view, that Munster do a job on them this weekend.
I can imagine. John, brilliant stuff. Thanks a million for checking in. And listen, I hope you get your 35 games and your medal around the neck.
Appreciate that, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Good man, John Ryan there, of course. Munster, he'll be back with Munster as well, of course, but he's a busy man. English Premiership, URC, Super Rugby all in one season. That's, I think he has to be the only person that's done that.
What would your inclination be if you were passing blood?
Well, I think that's the point. Like, when you listen to people like John, you're obviously going to think more about it. But I think straight away it's concern. Most people would be like, I'm sure it's grand.
I'd be like, if this happens again.
Yeah, yeah. If it's a one-off.
If it's a one-off, like. But I do think men are far too inclined to sort of just not go to the doctor and even do like damn it, Donald, to just get your blood checked once a year, little things like that. Which kind of got me thinking, like, because I don't necessarily do that, but I just think that's powerful stuff from, really.
100%. And like, for someone in a role model position that he is, like, young rugby fans or kids hear the likes of him, or not necessarily kids, grown adults, as you say, who are afraid to talk about health or go to the doctor or whatever. Like, when you see someone like John speaking so clearly about it, and that's a mad, like, the thought of having to go to the bathroom of a restaurant every time you go in, and having to assess potential routes and you know, coping with the worst eventualities. That's insane stuff.
Brave stuff from...
I hadn't been aware of, like, same as yourself, I know that survey says a lot of people will be familiar with the symptoms and stuff. I wasn't.
No, I wasn't.
You know, ulcerative colitis, I maybe heard of, but I had no idea what it entailed. So to hear John's story is insane. He talked even as well. We didn't get a chance to chat to him, but I think he was on sachets and suppositories as his original treatment, and then it got worse in 2014, and he moved on to infliximab infusions, which he said worked very well, and then he had only one major flare-up between 2014 and this year. So clearly that calmed it down. So once you diagnose it and once you find out that you have it, you can obviously go on to these tablets and things, and that completely sorted out for you. So as John says, his life now is at least back to normal to some degree. Keep your comments coming in on the YouTube channel. There are plenty on Evan Ferguson. People are taking the piss a little bit, Johnny, but
doesn't bother me at all.
No, but they're having their fun. Put Evan Ferguson behind a paywall, Johnny Ward, 2023. These quotes.
Just to reiterate, I'm not necessarily bigging up Evan Ferguson. Haaland is not comparable to Evan Ferguson. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
like Haaland's I've never seen anything like Haaland.
Mm.
I'm just saying, outside the box, he's actually, if you watch his, he's not actually that good outside the box. And in a game like the game in Madrid where you have to link up play, I think in Europe at times he's been hit and miss this year, but he'll probably blitz it in the second leg.
No doubt. It's always the way. Commentator's curse. The back of the Sun, just a couple of the other stories to bring you this morning. Manchester City will bank almost £300 million in prize money if they clinch the treble. Seven
Good
games
to
away.
Hear.
Good to hear. They need the money, of course. Big United boost for Ratcliffe. The Glazers are finally ready to sell Manchester United, with Jim Ratcliffe the preferred bidder. Ratcliffe and his Ineos petrochemicals giant have been engaged in a drawn-out bidding war with Qatari banker Sheikh Yassim bin Hamad Al Thani for ownership of England's biggest football club. So it's been a five-month process so far. Katie hoped to box off headquarters. Crook Park is still Katie Taylor's dream venue, and she refuses to accept defeat. The champ will fight Chantelle Cameron instead of Amanda Serrano at the Three Arena on the 20th of May. That's actually coming up very shortly, 9 days' time. The Taylor-Serrano rematch was due to take place at Croker this year, but she has not stopped believing that that fight can happen. We didn't get talking about this with John Duggan, but it's quite interesting. Hugo Lloris's offer from Saudi to treble his pay, 36-year-old Spurs goalkeeper, would get £300,000 a week if this was to happen. So his contract expires next year. Lloris is understood to be open to a new challenge after more than a decade in the Premier League. This offer from Saudi Arabia is not his only option, but is by far the most lucrative. So it gives him a chance to earn at least three times his present salary, which is around £100,000 a week.
There's just something incredibly powerful about, like, these petrostates who basically become wealthy because they're burning oil and selling oil and is literally destroying the planet and bringing us on the brink of extinction, that they're able to offer footballers this obscene money to go over there and, you know, essentially satisfy Mohammed bin Salman, really.
Yeah.
And we don't deserve anything better than we're going to get.
It's crazy. And you see the money involved. It might sound surprising, but when you see the states that are involved there, £300,000 a week is nothing to them.
It's grim.
It's very, very grim. 21 minutes past nine on this Thursday morning's OTB. Here are some highlights coming up for you on the OTB podcast network across today. Martin Johnson, former England captain, was in conversation with Joe. Really interesting chat. Kenny Cunningham, of course, in great form in the news round last night as well. And the Hurling Pod with Will O'Callaghan and the lads. You can follow OTB across social and subscribe to the OTB podcast network. After the ads, we're building up to the Leinster Senior Football Final at Croke Park this weekend. It's Dublin against Louth, and we have Ger Brennan and Darren Clark back after these.
You're listening to OTB AM.
22 minutes past nine on this Thursday morning's OTB AM. Time to turn our attention back to Gaelic Games, and we're going to build up to the Leinster Senior Football Final at Croke Park this Sunday.
Does Darren Clark have footage of the goal in Gorta Keegan though last night?
No,
is that general neck of the woods?
Exactly.
A goal to end all games, really.
He couldn't possibly have. We have Dublin and Louth guests. We've Ger Brennan and we have Darren Clark. Good morning to you both, lads. How are things?
All good, lads. Good morning.
All good.
Good morning, lads.
Ger, I was chatting to you yesterday over the WhatsApp, and Darren played with St Sylvester's in Dublin, so you've played against each other a few times, in fact.
Haven't you?
Yeah. I was just asking Darren there, is he still going? And he is, in fairness to him, but I'm not able to.
Still plugging on.
What age are you now, Darren?
Yeah, 40 next month, lads.
Jesus.
So, trying to get to squeeze the last bit of juice out of it, you know.
Well, sure, geez, we were talking about Luka Modric on the show this morning, and LeBron James at 38 still flying. So, I mean, there's hope. There's always hope, Darren.
There's hope. There's hope. Keep going. I heard you were banging in a few goals last night, Shane.
Just the one. Yeah. It was a last minute winner into the top ends, though, so I'll take it.
Bertie Keegan.
We haven't spoken about that enough on the show this morning, don't we? Yeah, we got to keep bringing it up. It's just been a few times. Lads, really looking forward to this final. I know Dublin will be favourites in many people's book, but certainly Mickey Hart and Louth will hope to have something to say about that. It's no foregone conclusion. Darren, what's the feeling like in Louth? I was driving through Louth on the way back up yesterday evening, and plenty of flags out. I'm sure there's plenty of excitement in the county ahead of this one.
Yeah, massive excitement, Shane. In fairness, I suppose you look back, it's 13 years since the famous 2010 match, so it's been a long kind of road to get back to a final, which is great now to see, obviously. And the build-up and excitement is really good in the county. There's a kind of a good buzz since Mickey and Gavin's come in, and they've been on a good road, obviously, coming from Division 4 up to Division 1. And obviously, the lads know that the task at hand, it's not going to be any way of the imagination an easy game or whatever. It's going to be tough, and we know what we're up against. But there's great excitement, there's good age profile to the team, and the lads are really looking forward to it. And as you said, you could see the flags and the whole town of Ardee, and the county is really getting behind the team and that. So it's great, and it's great excitement, and it's great to finally get back to a Leinster final.
It's mad because I was looking at last night, I was trying to find the last Leinster championship meeting between Dublin and Louth, and it was 2019, so not that long ago. But it was Dublin 5 goals and 21 points, Louth 10 points. Like, it just speaks volumes, Darren, how far Louth have come, that is, there's absolutely no chance of that happening this weekend, and the gap has been closed remarkably.
Yeah, no, in fairness, and like, you look at kind of since Mickey has come in, the first couple of results in the first years, like, they had lost obviously to Offaly after extra time in Navan in 2020, and then 2021 we obviously lost to Kildare. So to go on the run around this year, I suppose it's all been built off the back of strong league performance, like promotion, and maybe when the lads came in that they got a good building block by being in Division 4 and being able to kind of put together a group of players that would be there for the foreseeable future. And they've built it nicely. They've got promotion all the way through from Division 4 up to Division 2, and possibly unlucky this year not to get promotion to Division 1. So the building blocks have been there, and I suppose the Gavin and Mickey had come in and looked at the profile of the players, and I was actually involved with the under-20s myself there for a couple of years, and there's probably 12 or 13 lads in that panel at the minute, and they're all good lads. Like, they're really into it, and they're there for the right reasons, and the panel has kind of gelled so much over the year as well. And two good wins again, Westmeath and Offaly, where be it, we probably didn't play to the expected level you feel you can get to. But just to be in with a shot now of a Leinster final and playing Dublin as well is a massive occasion. So it's really exciting times in the wee county. So we're looking forward to Sunday.
Ger, three words. Where are Dublin?
Three words. Where are Dublin? You'd be worried, certainly, talking to a couple of former teammates and other Dublin supporters and lads in the club. There is probably a lack of urgency and consistency in how we're playing. We felt after the Laois game that, okay, they've finally switched on. They're being much more direct, being much more ruthless to the Dublin that we had become used to seeing. And then they kind of faltered again. They sat back against Kildare. The energy levels were low. I think up until Jack McCaffrey came in at half-time in the Kildare game, that kind of gave us a bit of a better platform, and he kind of set the example for other players to start taking men on and trying to turn the opposition defence. So yeah, you'd be kind of worried as a Dublin supporter. I think Darren mentioned it, and yourselves, the gap has been significantly been closed between 2019 and the game the weekend, and you just have to look to that. I suppose it was a promotion playoff to go up to Division 1 between Louth and Dublin. A draw at half-time, and Dublin did push on the second half. So you know, that gap has closed. But if Dublin are in the humour and they're switched on, you know, they could put on a big score on Sunday. But you have to give a lot of respect and credit to Mickey Hart and the Louth players and the work they've done over the last couple of years. So even physically, from a conditioning point of view, they're able to last with the top teams, which allows them to be in a position to fight for winning of games towards the latter stages.
And just on that, in terms of the Dublin coaching staff this year, you have this bizarre situation where Dublin are in Division 2. obviously widely expected to get out of Division 2. They're then into a Leinster Championship in which, you know, they're practically certain to get to the final, in which case they're into the round robin. So, like, is that part of the mindset where it's like a horse being trained for Cheltenham? Like, when do they peak here?
That would certainly come into the planning, and I think a lot of counties would be trying to, the top counties would be trying to figure out how the best peak for this new setup in the years to come. So there'll be a lot of analysis and recording and reviewing of physical conditioning and everything else. But, you know, there's only, for me, there's only so much fitter you can become when you're an elite player. It is about sharpening the skill set, the decision making. For me, one of the worrying things for Dublin is the amount of changes that we see Desi making, whether they're out of necessity, coupled with trying to keep fellas fresh. But I think there's a lack of cohesion and kind of understanding amongst the group, the first 15, that does come when you get used to playing with one another. And no doubt Desi and the management team do have one eye on the latter stages of the championship, but at the same time, it is hard just to switch it on if you don't find that bit of form and you don't find that bit of rhythm. And that's where Leinster probably has been kind to Dublin over the last 10 years, where we have been able to rack up a couple of scores, get the confidence up and be in a good position and have a good understanding amongst the group going into the knockout stage of the championship. So that lack of cohesion, the lack of a settled team is something that would worry me.
Darren, it's been a funny Leinster Championship for Louth so far, in that the 8 points down at half time to come back against Westmeath and Navan dramatically, and what a comeback that was, and then almost throwing it away against Offaly. You're 4 points up after 62 minutes and then the game goes to extra time, and to be fair to Louth, they really pushed on in extra time, and Sam Mulroy in particular in that extra period was brilliant, I thought. So what do you read into that? Like, I guess you've seen that they can come back from a deficit, but they can also nearly throw away a lead as well.
Yeah, no, right, Shane. Like, we were commentating on the local radio on the match in Navan, and I suppose coming off the back of such a good league campaign, like you beat Kildare, you beat Meath, Hussey could have beaten Derry and RD, went to the last game against Dublin, and coming off the back of a strong league performance, you're kind of looking and potential banana skin going into a Leinster campaign with a bit of expectation on your back. And in the first half in that game, the lads were very flat, I suppose, coming off the back of the league. And at half time, it didn't look as if there was any way out really at all. They were playing nothing at all. Westmeath were on top of their game. But the character the lads showed in the second half was something else. Like, they outscored Westmeath 2-6 to 2 points after half time. And it was a fantastic win because Westmeath had no real answer in the second half. Then, obviously, going into the Offaly game, you know, there was a couple of changes made in the team. And I suppose, from a Louth perspective, you've kind of enhanced the squad and the size of the squad and who's playing. So the lads threw in three kind of new fellas that hadn't played a whole pile of game time this year, and then obviously we were able to extend the squad out and finish the game with an extra time. But again, we were lucky in that game. Like, the Offaly, I think it was Keane Farrell, had a chance in the last play of the game that possibly could have won the game for Offaly. And I suppose, yeah, you need that little bit of luck, I suppose, when you're coming from where Louth are coming from. And but the lads showed again great character in the extra time, as you mentioned. Sam Roy kicked on 4 or 5 really good points for a game. He had been, for his own standards, he'd been quiet. He was outstanding in extra time. Kieran Downey was excellent, scored 7 points from play. Like, so the lads are operating at a lot higher level than we've been at in the last number of years. And there's probably a little bit of maybe calmness with Mickey and Gavin that's been brought into the panel, and you could see that in the two results again, Westmeath and Offaly. They didn't panic. They kept playing to their system, sticking to the game plan, and then seeing the game out in a very good character.
And that's the thing, Ger, as well. Like, you know, years ago, if Dublin played this live team, they could nearly, with all due respect, concentrate on themselves, not worry too much about the opposition, and just play their own game. But now, as Darren mentions, you've got players like Kieran Downey and Sam Mulroy who are picking off scores very comfortably, and all of a sudden, Dublin need to have a plan for some of these live forwards.
Look, yeah, they will have a plan. They put two man markers on Downey and Mulroy. Saying to Darren off air, I involved with Carlo for a couple of seasons just during COVID, and I got to see Mickey and Loud up close, and both players are particularly impressive and extremely comfortable footballers. and they won't be particularly fazed by the fact that they're playing in Dublin or again they're playing in Croke Park, because they'll have that prior experience of the Division 2 league game. From a Louth point of view, I'm sure they will have looked at how Kildare set up as well the last game, and while not going too far from their own setup, they will have to look at how Kildare did get at Dublin, how they slowed the pace down, how they played to their tempo. They took the sting out of any momentum that Dublin were building, and I think that's something that Mickey Hart as a tactician, and I know James did play college football with him, converges in goal, he'd be very cute and have great game intelligence. He'll know when to pick up the pace or slow it down, and I think that's something that's Louth will probably go at to just tactically, just to take the sting out of the game, be within a fighting chance going into the second half, and then you're backing that. You know, sometimes it's uncoachable quality that likes it down, and Murray have, they're just natural footballers and they have that skill set there, but now they also have the conditioning, they have the confidence, and they have the support of their management, and they will cause Dublin problems. We've probably been a bit caught in the full back line, but Michael Fitzsimons has been missed out on a couple of games. I know he's studying for exams, trying to be a doctor. So hopefully he'll feature the weekend. He should settle us down a bit in the full back line. But we have looked vulnerable at times in that full back part of the pitch. Coupled with that, the pressure further out the field has been average at best. Allowing players to get a lot of touches on the ball, and whether you're a junior footballer or senior footballer, if you give a fella enough time to get a couple of touches in, his confidence will grow, and he will be able to hurt you going to the direction. So there's a couple of areas really that Dublin need to look at: their full back line, those couple of man-on-man matchups, but also how they're going to press the ball further out the pitch. I hope we don't sit off and allow just to build up steam and come at us.
Briefly, Gerard, I know a lot of your former Dublin teammates have been talking about this on Twitter after Glenn Ryan's comments post Leinster semi-final about Croke Park and the home venue for the Dubs in a provincial semi-final. What did you make of the whole hullabaloo? It seems to be a conversation that comes up quite often.
It's an absolute advantage to be playing your championship matches in a ground where you have your league games. So like that's nobody can debate that, whether you're from Dublin or otherwise. The dressing room thing, as far as I'm aware, is based on the Irish spelling, and that determines what dressing room you go into. So I've been in both dressing rooms in the Hogan Stand in my time.
Was it Balia or Clea or Ahtlia? You see, there's
That's a great one. And I
Balia is the town, like, so Clea is the county.
I suppose, fair, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good one. And then look at some counties, then it could be on Corkic as well.
Of course, it's on Loo as well. So this, we're getting on Loo, here now. On Loo is ahead of Arclea.
Yeah.
So, we'll be in dressing room one now on Sunday, lads.
But players, and I imagine Darren would probably agree with me, everyone wants to play in Croke Park as a player. It's the mecca of Gaelic games, you know. So Louth would be probably slightly more advantaged to be playing in a park college or something like that for this final. But it's just a wonderful honour and experience as a Gaelic footballer, hurler, or ladies player to get that opportunity to put your boots, lace your boots on and play in Croke Park. But yes, Dublin are advantaged over the years to have been played there so much in the league.
It's 1:45 PM starting Sunday, lads. Dublin out. Very briefly, who's going to win and by how much? Ger, starting with yourself.
I think Louth can be within 5 or 6 points. Dublin to win.
Okay. Yourself, Darren?
Yeah, look, we're going up with more expectation than anything, Shane. Like, obviously, you're looking for the lads to familiarise themselves with playing the likes of Dublin. It's great to kind of see them in the league competing against them so strongly. And again, you're looking for just the lads to go out and express themselves and play to the best of their ability. And let's see where that takes us. And please God, it takes us to win, you know.
We'll
be there and hope anyway.
Exactly. Well, we all know what happened the last time Louth were in the Leinster final. Hopefully there's no controversy this time. But lads, enjoy the final. Thanks a million for popping on this morning.
Cheers. Thanks so much, lads.
Great stuff. Darren Clark there, former Louth footballer, and Ger Brennan, of course, former Dub, two-time All-Ireland winner with the Dubs. Johnny, great stuff.
Thanks,
good morning. Thanks a million for hopping in with us. On tomorrow's show, Adrian and myself will be live with Ronan O'Gara. We'll have Sue Ronan on the 50th anniversary of the Irish Women's National Team's first ever competitive game. We'll have Alan Quinlan. We'll have more on the Kildare Camogie story. Jason McAteer's episode of You Had to Be There, which I'm really looking forward to, and plenty more on the show as well. Right now, David Waldstein of the New York Times on the story of Oakland A's controversial move. Moneyball, great movie as well. You can pick up that story there as well. Have a terrific Thursday. Hi.
OTB AM with Gillette Labs. Get the ultimate shave or your money back. Neon Night Edition available now.